Hello and welcome to the podcast that has spent 10 years and 19 movies trying to hunt down those damn Infinity Stones. Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me, as always, is a man who just wants to make sure that Korg and Meek are okay.
Mike DiCriscio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
I am doing great. Forget hashtag where's Hawkeye, hashtag where's Korg.
That's what I've been saying this entire time. If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, first we start with some film news and then move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we have been consuming lately. And then after that, we move on into our featured review. This week, we're discussing the latest film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe directed by Joe and Anthony Russo, Avengers Infinity War. Now, Mike, Avengers Infinity War is a big film.
Yeah.
So big.
Like, go ahead.
I thought you were going to riff something there, Mike. That's okay.
I did, but then you had a thing, so I stopped.
The movie is so big, in fact, that it takes more than two people to review it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Truly, truly, truly insane. So joining us as a guest today, Vin Craig. Hey, Vin.
What if I just stayed quiet and then, like... like, everybody... You guys just had to pretend that there was just two of you. People be like, what is he talking about? Who? What? What?
Yes.
It was just silence for like 40 minutes after that, and then it went off. I don't get it.
Yeah, well,
I'm doing good. I'm doing better than Korg.
So we think. Mouth. We don't know what happened to Korg, man. I mean, okay, we're not getting into spoilers yet or anything like that, but, you know, hashtag where's Korg is definitely a thing that has been on my mind lately.
Yeah, no spoilers, but there's I'm going to say a 50% chance he didn't make it. Given that that's the odds everybody had in the movie, apparently.
True. Okay. That is, we're already diving dangerously close into spoiler territory.
You're right.
We have not started our review yet. So,
I've never done this before.
It's okay. You're our first ever podcast guest, Vin. So this is going to take some getting used to. Some adjustments are coming.
No, I'm flattered. It only took a lot of begging.
Yes. Basically, every time I've ever seen you in person, you've been like, you should have me on the podcast. And I'd be like, yeah, you should come on. And then we never did anything about it.
Like a creepy guy from high school, I wore you down.
You did it, Vin.
Yes, that's definitely the metaphor that I want to go with. And I think with that, we should move on into film news. All right.
That was a great bumper.
First time with a guest, womp.
All right. It's time for film news here on Film Bookcast. And so we've got a few things I want to get through. I want to get through the film news and discussion segments as quickly as we can, I guess, because we do want to get to Avengers Infinity War. We're going to talk about that for like 3 hours, probably.
Roughly as long as the movie was.
Exactly. First off, I want to kick off the film news by mentioning a recent actor who passed away. Usually we save these for the end of film news, but I figured just throw this out there at the beginning. Vern Troyer died, guys. That's very sad.
That is sad.
Yeah. Gunned down in his prime.
Well, this guy was like an icon for a little bit. You know, Mini-Me was huge. I distinctly remember watching Austin Powers 2 when I was like 7 years old, sleeping over at a friend's house. Definitely shouldn't have been watching it.
Nope.
And thinking it was like the funniest fucking thing I had ever seen at the time. And Mini-Me was a big part of that. You know, there was a lot of like, you know, imitating Dr. Evil saying, or Mini-Me and that kind of thing.
Dr. Evil, while you were frozen, we began a program to clone you.
Cool.
Send in the clone!
He is exactly like you in every way. Except 1/8 your size.
Breathtaking. I shall call him Mini-Me.
Anyway, yeah, so I just wanted to kind of reference that up front, because I don't want to dwell on, sad news this entire time, because we're going to have a lot of sad stuff to talk about in Avengers. So I wanted to say RIP Vern Troyer. Before moving on into some more actual film news, Star Trek IV. The fourth film in the kind of reboot, the rebooted Star Trek franchise, that's been up in the air for a little while. Nobody's really known what's going on with that. Star Trek Beyond kind of underperformed. And then there was talk about a movie where Chris Hemsworth comes back. And there's been talk about a movie that's been written by Quentin Tarantino. And like, nobody really has any idea what's going on. The Quentin Tarantino
presumably
one.
Presumably Star Trek, but where they say the N-word a lot.
Yes.
It's the only difference.
can I point that out? Is that allowed? I don't know.
you're flying too close to the sun, man. You got to back off.
You're right. It's not me. It's Quentin.
So Star Trek IV just got a director. It's a S.J. Clarkson, a female director who's mostly known for British TV. She also directed a movie in 2010 called Toast. And Paramount also, by the way, is saying they're making two more Star Trek movies. So nobody really knows which one this is. This could be the one that Tarantino did a story for. This could be the one with Hemsworth. This could be both of them at the same time. Like, I don't really know. What, I mean, Mike, what do you think about potential Star Trek IV news?
I mean, sure. Yeah, why not? If we're going to live in a future where there's a Black Cat, Silver Sable, and Shrek 5, like, sure. Let's have another Star Trek.
Whoa. Yeah. You're getting a fifth Shrek movie?
Well, you don't even know, Vin.
That's what
Buckle
Myers
up,
is coming
kid.
Out of retirement for?
Man,
that's what's getting him off the bench?
Okay, so Shrek 5 is like a recurring joke in the podcast.
No, it's a reality, Mike. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once we have that reality stone, we can will Shrek 5 into existence.
Can do whatever
or
we
bubbles.
Want.
Or bubbles. We can do that, sure. too.
That was a popular one.
Anyway, Vin, are you a fan of the Star Trek movies, Vin?
I am. I was never that into... I'm weird about space movies. Like, I like Star Wars. I like the cultural significance of Star Trek and Star Wars. The stories are cool, but I'm not like... It's not like my life, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm not super invested in the characters.
Right.
Okay.
But Chris Pine may be the most charming man in the world.
Possibly the most charming science. Chris.
Possibly.
Although
close
I don't
second,
know.
Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, Hemsworth, man. I mean... Honestly, the Chris's fluctuate with me over time. Like, I was a big Chris Pratt fan for a while. I was really big on Chris Evans. They're all really good Chris's. They're good Chris's.
I like Chris Evans. He's kind of vanilla. He's a little vanilla.
Yeah, but that's perfect for Captain America, though, you know?
Like, sure.
He fits that role so well. Like, he was my favorite for a while just because of Captain America. But now Chris Hemsworth, has turned out to be, the funniest Chris. And so I feel like I'm gravitating towards him. In terms of Chris
that
preference.
Came out of nowhere.
Yeah, what a twist.
But anyway, yeah, so Star Trek IV, I mean, S.J. Clarkson also the first female director working on a Star Trek movie, and kind of significant in that it seems like a lot of male directors have done, one indie movie and then jumped into, a massive $250 million blockbuster, the Colin Trevorrows of the world, the guy who did Safety Not Guaranteed and then jumped into Jurassic World, Gareth Edwards jumped from Monsters to Godzilla. Mark Webb did, 500 Days of Summer, then The Amazing Spider-Man. And
Dan Trachtenberg.
Sure. Well, Dan Trachtenberg didn't. I don't think Dan Trachtenberg's necessarily.
Oh, he didn't even
in there.
Do a feature. You're right. He did.
He did his
short film.
Yeah, his Portal short movie, and then he jumped into 10th Cloverfield Lane, which is more of a mid budget thing. I'm talking about Colin Trevorrow did a movie Safety Not Guaranteed that was $1 million. Jumped into Jurassic World, which cost $250 million, something like that. It's just a massive leap.
You're right. I'll leave.
Yeah. Goodbye, Vin. Goodbye forever.
you tried and it didn't work out, the thing with the guests. So,
but
you miss 100% of the shots you miss. Sorry. I'll stop.
But anyway, so this I think it's kind of interesting that this is a kind of the female equivalent of that. Like she did one movie, kind of very low budget for I think it was for a British TV movie actually, and it's kind of jumping into this massive blockbuster. And just it's not that I am a fan of that practice, but if that practice is going to be going on, it's nice that there's some equal ground going on. For a female director, because it doesn't really happen that often in Hollywood. So kind of cool to see. But then we have other news. This is probably the most exciting news for me. Vin, I don't know if you're a big fan of Leica Animation, but I'm very much a fan of Leica. They're the guys, the stop motion company that did Coraline, Paranorman, The Box Trolls, and Kubo and the Two Strings.
Oh, yeah.
I thought
did they do Kubo?
They did Kubo, yeah. That was the last movie.
You may recall, Hansa was roaming the distant farlands in search of a magical suit of armor. The only weapon in the whole world that could protect him from the power of the Moon King. This armor was made up of three pieces. The first...
Oh, I know. The Sword Unbreakable.
The second...
The breastplate.
Impenetrable.
Impenetrable.
And finally, the third weapon... Final piece of the armor.
I know this one. Pick me. The Helmet Invulnerable.
Before Hanzo could claim the armor and unite the pieces to reveal their true power, he was attacked by the Moon King's beasts.
And after Kubo, there was some trepidation. None of their movies do very well at the box office. But they're so good. And
well, critically, yeah, they're pretty successful.
Yeah, but financially they don't do that well. And there was talk that Leica might be shutting its doors because Travis Knight, the creator of Leica and the director of Two Bones, Two Strings, has been directing the Transformers spinoff Bumblebee.
Oh, the John Cena Haley Stanfield vehicle.
Yes.
I didn't even have to look that up. I like John Cena that much.
Yeah.
Also, I appreciate the opportunities for puns with that movie being a vehicle for people.
Good point, Mike. Good point.
I'll be here all episode.
But anyway, yeah. So Travis Knight, I think, is a very talented filmmaker. I'm kind of curious to see what he does with the Transformers movie, especially, like, it'll be interesting to see what a Transformers movie looks like without the guise of Michael Bay.
Presumably good.
Yeah, hopefully.
And maybe stop motion. We don't know.
That would be the dream.
That would be so
He's
hype.
Like, but how do I get these people to, like, stand still in every frame while I take their photo? And they're like, nah, man, you can do it.
Just let it rock. Still,
like, you could just – that tech exists.
Yeah, you know, cameras could just roll now. It's crazy.
It's like, what? Witchcraft.
But anyway, Leica Animation is teaming up with Annapurna Pictures for the next movie. Annapurna has been financing a lot of the incredible movies over the past few years. So that's pretty exciting because Leica, I was afraid they were done for good. Now they have a new movie coming out. They got a good backer. So this could be pretty good. And Annapurna could put the marketing but the dollars behind it to get it into a wider audience. We know nothing about what the actual movie is. We just know that it stars Hugh Jackman, Zoe Saldana, and Zach Galifianakis. And it will be directed by Chris Butler, the guy who directed Paranorman, which I love. So... yeah.
So we can assume there will be singing?
It's possible. Hugh Jackman
and
is in it.
We can assume it'll take 9 years to get 10 minutes of footage.
Yes. Yep. I think there might be a release date, though. I didn't write that down. But I'm pretty sure either 2019 or 2020. Like, I think they're already in the works on it. So we'll see what happens. But I will say, I mean, the animation for Leica movies, I think, is nothing short of spectacular. Especially, like, you saw Kubo, Vin?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I love stop motion.
Yeah, no, I think they are the, like, I loved Pixar for so long, but I feel like the 2010s, like, for me, the animation world has been ruled by Leica, and, like, nothing has even come close.
Oh, well, I'm an anime guy, so, like... Animation for me is a totally different world. That's like my preferred medium of content.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
My preferred delivery system is I don't like looking at real people. unless it's John Cena, then yeah, put him on there.
He's the only one that makes the cut.
Because anime,
granted, sometimes
John Cena,
he's very
else.
Hard to see.
Jesus Christ.
I'm positive I made that exact same joke on this podcast like a year ago for some reason.
Can we pull that up? Could you do that? Could you find the clip?
Colin, check the
saying that and put it right here.
There it is.
Yeah, I'm definitely not doing that, but that's that seems like a lot of work. But anyway, we got one last bit of film news, guys. And this one I wanted to talk about. We usually don't talk about trailers that much in the film news segment. But I figured I'd talk about this one because people have been asking me about this one a lot. Like for whatever reason, this trailer came out. And literally everyone I knew messaged me to find out what I thought about it. And I was very confused why they really wanted my opinion on Venom.
What the hell are you?
We are Venom.
So yeah, the new trailer for Venom came out. I'm curious what you guys' thoughts are. Because to me, this looks like the kind of superhero movie they were making back in like 2003.
Oh, yeah,
what, like
yeah.
Daredevil?
Yeah, like Daredevil, like Elektra, like Ghost Rider, like that era of superhero movie before they like embraced being like, you know, kind of fun and like goofy.
Kind of comic booky.
This looks like Venom shows up at the very end, like the actual like Venom symbiote, and he looks like, you know, it seems like they're almost embarrassed that Venom's in the movie, so they save it till the very, very end of the trailer. But it just looks tailor-made to appeal to every, like, Hot Topic teenager for that era of movies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but the suit looks so good.
Does it?
I think that it looks awesome.
Yeah.
Technology is amazing.
I mean, I think it depends on how much you like Venom as a character.
I think it depends on how much you like the aesthetic of Silly Putty.
Yes.
That's
100%.
Which for me is a lot.
Okay. You're going to be the one guy in the theater going like, yeah, Silly Putty.
I will adamantly cheer at any movie I'm in. It doesn't matter what the movie is. I will at the top of my lungs go, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie could be fine. I just don't have that much faith in it. And I'm like, there is some hype around this. I feel like people that I know are really excited about it. And, you know, I like Tom Hardy. I think Tom Hardy's, you know, I think based on what I've seen in the trailer, he's given a very weird performance, but Tom Hardy's kind of a weird actor. So, you know, I'm kind of into that. Michelle Williams is good. Like, it has a good cast. I think it's very...
Jenny Slate's there also for some reason.
Jenny Slate is there mispronouncing the word symbiote.
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 Symbiosis. Yeah. and I think Venom himself just looks like literal garbage. I don't know. His tongue looks like a penis and... It's weird.
With the way his teeth unfold, Mike.
He puts the suit on, like, opposite. He puts the suit on from the bottom up. Which I guess is how most people put their superhero suits on, now that I'm thinking about it.
He puts his Venom suit on one symbiote pant leg at a time.
Just like the rest of us.
I have to say,
there's the GIF going around, I'm sure you guys saw it, of... the Venom reveal where the face flips over and it's googly eyes.
Yes.
That's it. Movie ruins.
Seems amazing.
They'll never break that mental image. Game over. Shut it down. Don't release this movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm just excited. It's like from an acting standpoint of seeing Tom Hardy play the duality of book. Cause I'm assuming he's doing the voice also.
I think he is.
Sounded
yes.
like him. Yeah.
I hope.
I mean, it's Tom Hardy has never shied away from doing a silly voice.
That's what I don't understand. When did that happen? Oh, you mean the incredible performance he gave as Bane?
I love his performance as Bane.
I know. It's very eye driven. It's very ocular.
Yes.
What if Topher Grace voiced the symbiote?
Oh, what a man! Twist. Like his redemption.
This is the Topher Grace comeback. Yeah.
Hey, don't call it a comeback.
I actually saw footage from that movie where somebody like deepened his voice, and it works so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're big fans.
But at the end of the day, it's
here.
Still Topher Grace in the suit.
Fair enough. I am one of the people who thinks Spider-Man 3 is kind of underrated. But the Venom stuff...
I don't think it's as bad as everybody else. Yeah, like,
yeah,
gives it...
The Venom stuff in it is not good. But I think everything else in Spider-Man 3 is, like, pretty solid. And it's not even that Venom himself in Spider-Man 3 is bad. It's just that he's, like, wedged into that movie for no reason.
Yeah, that's the Spider-Man movie effect.
Yeah, that's fair enough. These more sequels a Spider-Man movie has, the more... pointless characters it'll have.
Every sequel Spider-Man gets, it's that number plus one for how many villains they're going to put in the movie.
Holy shit.
That's actually, that's interesting. So
that's pretty spot on, actually.
Yeah, so with Spider-Man Homecoming, they only had the Vulture in that movie, really.
And Shocker 1, Shocker 2.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
The Scorpion shows up in there.
Okay. So does that count as, like, a sixth Spider-Man movie, or is that just, like, it started back at one, do you think?
Well, it would be six, yeah.
Okay.
Donald Glover, he's a bad guy, right? Talking about bread.
Talking about
like
bread.
Like villains tend to do.
He's got ice cream in there, man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man ruined his ice cream.
Yeah, so really, Spider-Man's
the real bad guy.
Spider-Man's kind of the villain of that movie, if you think about it, because he ruined Donald Glover's ice cream, you know?
Yeah.
You don't mess with Lando like that. but anyway, yeah, so this Venom trailer, I think it looks like it could be fine, but I don't have that much faith in it. It looks like a movie that would feature a soundtrack by Limp Bizkit.
That'd be dope.
I just, any number of symbiote puns... Like, if he doesn't at one point go, I am Symbi out of here.
Oh, my God.
Walk out of the room. I would be so disheartened.
I mean,
but also, Sony historically can't cut a trailer.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I think, were they in charge of the Spider-Man Homecoming trailers? I remember thinking those just looked okay.
Probably.
Yeah.
They had a lot of Iron Man to the point where I was like, this is probably all Iron Man's going to be in the movie.
And it kind of was. But, yeah.
That was the thing. They ruined the scene, though, where, like, the suit opens up and Tony's actually in there in the trailer.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Because they put that in. That was before Marvel started editing their trailers as to fool us as to what's in the movie.
Right.
This is why, Vin, I am a big proponent of being unsullied as far as trailers come out. I don't go out of my way to watch them. If I see them in the theater, then that's all I'm going to see them. Because I think they give away too many movies, or too much of movies.
Yeah.
So to be able to go into a movie completely blind and be like, oh shit, Tony's in that suit. It's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right on.
Cool.
I don't have that kind of self-control.
That's fair.
Yeah, I usually do have that self-control, and I usually don't go out of my way to watch trailers. But then there are some movies where I'm just going to watch everything that comes out. Like Infinity War was for me. When that first trailer for Infinity War dropped, I think I watched it like 10 times in a row. It's like I was just like, whoa, oh my God, that looks amazing.
Also,
this
now
is the first movie for Marvel I actively didn't seek out spoilers for.
Wow.
Do you usually seek out spoilers?
This is the first Marvel movie I went into not knowing what the post-credit scene was before I saw the movie.
Really? Okay.
That's incredible.
Yeah. That's yeah. Why were you spoiling?
Spoilers to me don't like ruin a movie. It's because I like you approach it. I approach it for so many different ways because like I work and make films kind of. So I have a very technical approach to how I watch things. But then like I have my inner 5-year old that's like superheroes. And it's they kind of fight each other. And the 5-year old, he doesn't care like if the other guy knows.
That's fair.
You have a very Bruce Banner Hulk duality going on.
Oh yeah, I'm clinically what they would call crazy.
Oh, the technical term.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, I'm with you actually. I don't think spoilers tend to actually ruin the movie because if the movie can be ruined by a spoiler, then the movie probably isn't that good.
Exactly.
To begin with. But I do like that feeling of surprise, like when you see something that you didn't know was going to happen. Like it is, pretty great. And so for, especially with like big blockbuster movies like this, when you can see them like in a crowd that's discovering something for the first time, it's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that is the trailer for Venom. We kind of got off track a little bit there.
Sorry, I do that.
That's fine. That's what we do in this podcast. Anyway, I think that wraps up our film news. Let's move on, guys, into our discussion.
Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies you see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, it's time for our discussions here on Film Bookcast. So we've each got some stuff that we wanted to discuss. Mike, we'll start with you. What did you have to discuss with us today?
This week, I only have one thing to discuss, and that is Broken Lizard's Club Dread.
I bet you watched You and Kelly, and most of it's just common sense. Like right now, I'm making my famous coconut peach pie. Can anyone guess the secret ingredient? Come on. Coconut peach pie. The secret ingredient, coconut, peas,
coconut?
Yes, God damn it! Yes! 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 Jesus, you think any money has to put up with this shit?
Okay, now did you watch this because Super Troopers 2 just hit theaters?
I didn't get a chance to see Super Troopers 2, but it got me thinking about Broken Lizard, and they did some pretty great... like stoner comedies, you know, they got a pretty good track record, I think. And of all of them, I don't know. I thought Club Dread was my favorite.
Not Slammin' Salmon,
although close second. Super Troopers is probably my favorite now. The original.
That's fair.
It's Club Dread. For those that don't know, is their horror spoof for Broken Lizard. It takes place on Pleasure Island. Where a aging Jimmy Buffett stand-in, I forget his name, unfortunately, is played by Bill Paxton, which is amazing.
Incredibly by Bill Paxton.
Yeah, kind of doing that, you know, island life resort thing, and it's just about a slasher shows up on the island, killing all the staff and everything. And the problem with this is I think it has not aged entirely, the comedy has not aged entirely well. It's a lot of
Coconut Pete.
Coconut Pete, that's it. Yes. Yeah. Amazing. But it's a lot of, kind of douchey dude bro college chicks are just there to get boned kind of humor.
Okay.
Which, you know, in 2018, maybe not so much with that. But all the other stuff that is, like, the horror trope spoof is hilarious. There's a scene in a hedgerow maze where they're playing Pac-Man, basically. Like, the guy's got to be chasing these topless girls, and he's got to, you know, they're the ghost kind of thing. And this one guy's playing the pair, you know, like in Pac-Man.
Yeah.
And then it's a killer POV chase scene of a guy dressed as a pair being chased by a machete-wielding slasher. And it's hilarious because he's dressed as a pair. Like, that's the whole joke. And it's so so funny. So there is some good stuff going on in there. But, you know, some of it might be a bit dated for the wokeness of 2018.
Okay.
Also, Steve Lemmy plays an incredibly Spanish man.
Yeah.
For somebody who's a very Jewish guy in real life.
That too, yeah.
Fair enough.
I don't want to call it brown face, but it's a lot of spray tan. It's a lot of spray tan on him in that movie.
That
accent is thick.
As close to brown face as you can possibly get.
Yeah.
He's got his toe in the spray tan.
Fair enough. So that is a Club Dread. Yeah, I've never really watched any Broken Lizard movies. It just hasn't happened. I don't know.
You never saw Beer Fest? You never saw any of that stuff?
No.
Not even Super Troopers?
No, I never saw Super Troopers.
How are you a college kid in the like, in the 2010s?
I'm sure they are very funny. I remember Beer Fest specifically. I remember that one movie coming out. And me kind of, and I think I was in high school at the time, right? That was 2007, I think. And I remember kind of writing it off as just like dumb, dumb, goofy movie or whatever.
You're above all that.
I was way too into the films of Luis Buñuel to bother with
that. I like Quentin Tarantino movies. I'm not going to watch Beer Fest.
But
I'm sure I said that at some point in my life.
But I remember when I was in college, I had a roommate who loved Beer Fest. It was one of his favorite movies. But he was also like my dumbest roommate. And and so my opinion on Beer Fest never changed. I just never watched it with him. But he would watch it all the time.
Give it a shot, Mike. Give it a shot. At least give Super Troopers or the OG a shot.
Yeah. So that's...
Yeah, that way when anybody asks for what you want to drink, you can tell them you want a liter of cola.
That's right.
Can't wait to get
it's
that
the best joke of that movie. It's the best joke in the movie.
All right, so that is Club Dread. Vin, what do you got to discuss today?
I watched Charlie Wilson's War last night.
Okay.
This is the CIA's weapons expert. One of them. But he's the most senior. Look.
Mike! Yeah, Bishop to Queen's Knight, 7.
See, he's playing without even looking at the board. That's a useful skill. If Afghanistan's ever invaded by Boris Spassky. Did my office not make it clear to Langley that I'm in no mood to be fucked around with? You answer to me, you answer to Jim Baker. Which do you want?
All right, the guy's a fucking Green Beret, Charlie. Are you trained with the SEALs? No one's trying to fuck with you.
Mike? Yeah, what was your move?
Knight to Queen's Bishop, 5.
All right, Queen to King's Rook, 3. Guy on the right. You don't want to trade Queens with me.
Shit.
All right. I apologize.
Okay. Everybody friends?
As a former naval officer myself, Mike, I should have known better.
As a former naval officer, I'd have been surprised if you had.
Now, what the fuck?
Hey.
He said he was sorry.
Tom Hanks' vehicle with Philip Seymour Hoffman, God rest his soul.
Yeah, written by Aaron Sorkin, right?
Yeah, written by Aaron Sorkin. Also from 2007. So if you want to ever take a tour that year, you can watch Beer Fest and then Charlie Wilson's War.
Man, what a talk about duality, huh?
Yeah. You want to talk about the human condition, you should definitely... keep those two movies in a row. No, it's incredible. Philip Seymour Hoffman gives just this incredibly, incredibly disgruntled performance as this like CIA guy who's been stuck in like I think Greece. He plays a CIA guy. Tom Hanks plays a local, a congressman, not a local politician. Guys, I swear I watched this movie.
I believe you. It was just last night too, right?
Tries to. It's Russia is invading Afghanistan. I sound so stupid right now. Russia's invading Afghanistan, and leave this all in. By the way, I want all this of this.
Oh, it's going to be there. In.
Russia's invading Afghanistan, and we have to go in and like Charlie Wilson, Tom Hanks is to get them weapons, but they can't know the weapons are from America. And of course, like he pulls it off. It's just it's a great movie because the star power in it's like there, and they're all acting their butts off. But at no point is it like, oh, I don't think he's going to be able to pull this off. Like, the movie opens with him getting a medal for doing it, so you know
right.
that he does it. And then he faces no roadblocks the whole time.
I mean, that's that kind
but
of...
Philip Seymour Hoffman has this incredible monologue opposite the guy who plays Tony Stark's dad, the older version.
John Slattery.
From Mad Men. Yeah, John Slattery. It's so good. Check it out, guys. That's a commercial. That's
cool.
Commercial.
That was a very enthusiastic review of Charlie Wilson's War, directed by Mike Nichols, I think. I think that might have been Mike Nichols' final film, actually, before he died.
He definitely, he did direct it. I didn't know he was dead.
Yeah, he died a few years ago. Sorry to break that news to you, man.
Guys, I have to go. I have a lot of thinking to do.
We'll take a minute.
Anyway, so that is Charlie Wilson's War, and then I have a few more discussions I want to talk about, too. Last weekend, I don't know if you guys celebrated, but it was a record store day. So a lot of the local record stores had, sales and stuff going on. But the Alamo Drafthouse in Yonkers was having a special record store day screenings all day. So they were showing different music movies all day. So it wasn't a marathon like I've gone to in the Drafthouse in the past that me and Mike have gone to. This was you can go to a 1 o'clock show of Bob Dylan, Don't Look Back. You can go to a 4 o'clock show of Shut Up and Play the Hits and that kind of thing. I went to a couple of nighttime shows. I went to see Awesome, I Fucking Shot That, which is the Beastie Boys concert movie from 2004 at Madison Square Garden. And I went to see Rock and Roll High School, the Ramones comedy from the 70s, which I've seen a few times, but I love. So I wanted to briefly mention these movies because Awesome, I Fucking Shot That is fucking dope. these are two of my favorite bands of all time. I love the Beastie Boys and I love the Ramones. And so to see this movie, I had never seen Awesome I Fucking Shot That. And the idea behind this concert movie, it's very different than most. What they did for this was they got 50 camcorders and just dispersed them amongst the entire audience at Madison Square Garden. And just had the audience film the concert themselves.
That's so awesome.
It's crazy.
Nuts.
Yeah, and the result is, like, it makes you feel like you're at the concert. Like, you're seeing, like, sometimes you're seeing the band, sometimes you're just seeing audience members going fucking nuts. And then there's just, like, you know, weird diversions. Like, one of the guys with the camera, they added this into the movie, you follow his journey to the bathroom during one song. Like, and you, like,
I was gonna ask.
Yeah, and you're, like,
I was gonna ask
it.
If that happens.
Yeah, it happens. And what's also cool, I mean, Dougie Fresh makes an appearance during this concert. DMC from Run DMC is literally just watching from the sidelines. He's there. Ben Stiller is in the audience.
What? And his wife, Christine Taylor.
And Christine Taylor, they're both there. And most cool of all, this is 2004, Donald Glover is in the audience of this movie.
What?
Yeah, and he is going nuts. He's rapping along with, I think it's Paul Revere where he's singing along to. And it's crazy. And not only is Donald Glover, like, you can see him in the audience, it actually, like, stops on him for a second and it kind of, like, freeze frames. And this is before anybody knew who Donald Glover was. This was 2004, you know? This is before he was even a writer on 30 Rock.
Was he just the bro rape guy at this point?
Did that already happen?
From Derek Comedy?
Yeah, maybe that must have
I don't remember when that came
point,
out.
Right?
Well,
it must have been around that time.
When did
Derek
YouTube
Comedy
start?
Wow.
Yeah, that's
YouTube started in 2005.
Well, maybe not that.
Okay, so
do you guys have a fact check person?
YouTube,
Colin,
was
let us know.
Yeah, then we're gonna call it 2005. If you don't,
I think YouTube was 2005. So it must have been a couple years later. But yeah, so and it's almost like this weird transitional moment where you see, like, these Beastie Boys, one of the, like, the icons of rap music, kind of just stops on Donald Glover, who would become like one of the icons of modern rap music, and it's like this transition between Beastie Boys and Childish Gambino. It's pretty insane. Like, that's all in retrospect, but it's pretty cool.
That's cool.
So, yeah, that is Awesome I Fucking Shot That. If you love Beastie Boys, it's well worth checking out. And then Rock and Roll High School, which I've seen a few times.
Things sure have changed since we got kicked out of high school.
Oh, where are you going?
Going to Mrs. McGree's class.
Oh, well, I'm happy to see that some students still are interested in their studies.
Hey, we're not students, we're the Ramones.
Ramones? You're responsible for making that horrible rock and roll music? You've turned the whole school against me. Do your parents know that you're Ramones?
And it's a movie that I absolutely love. It's a comedy from the 70s produced by Roger Corman, starring the Ramones. And it's great. PJ Souls is the lead character. She was Jamie Lee Curtis's friend in Halloween. And this movie is just a blast, absolute anarchy, fun. Directed by Alan Arkush, and also with some co-directed, uncredited stuff by Joe Dante, who I love. You get a lot of his sense of humor in this movie, too. So, yeah, Rock and Roll High School, I cannot recommend highly enough. The Ramones soundtrack is killer, and it just has, I think, one of the great endings of 70s cinema. And then I also have one more movie I wanted to mention, and it's a movie that I wanted to see back when it came out, like, 2 years ago. It actually played in my theater nearby for, like, a week and a half, and I just never got around to seeing it. And that is the latest Japanese Godzilla movie, Shin Godzilla, which was known in the U.S. as Godzilla Resurgence as well. And this is
right.
And have you guys seen Shin Godzilla?
No,
I've seen the trailer. Okay. Isn't it? There's like three different Godzillas in that movie, or three like iterations of Godzilla.
Yeah, so he actually evolves over time in this movie. So he starts off as like this weird like creature who's like kind of on all fours and like scurrying through the city. And I assumed it was some other monster and not Godzilla. And then later they call him Godzilla, and I was like, what? And then and then later on he's like turning it. He stands upright and he kind of turns into Godzilla. But anyway, this is directed by Hideaki Anno, who was best known as the creator of Neon Genesis Evangelion.
What?
Yeah.
Well, now I have to see it. That's amazing.
I didn't know that. Self-proclaimed anime guy.
Exactly. Well,
well, it's live action, isn't it, Mike? Sorry, I came at you hard there. I came at you real hard.
That was aggressive.
That was too aggressive.
Dial it back, guys. Dial it back. This is a family podcast.
I felt like you came at me, so I got defensive.
I'm sorry.
It's uncool. I'm in your house right now. I got to be polite, take my shoes off.
We are talking about Japanese movies, so yeah, take your shoes off.
True. That's fair.
But anyway, yeah, so I've never watched Neon Genesis Evangelion. I'm not a big anime guy, but I know that that's a very popular one. And this is kind of like if Japan remade In the Loop, but with Godzilla. And it's pretty great. So a lot of the movie is not even dealing with Godzilla at all. It's actually about like the inefficiency and redundancy of like government bureaucracy.
Isn't that most Godzilla movies don't have a lot of Godzilla?
That does tend to be the case. But then
I feel like it's weird we haven't figured that one out yet. It's been like 60 years of Godzilla movies coming out with where they're like, we should really focus on the office people. That's what people want to see.
Yeah, but I guess that this one really worked for me. I thought it was a lot of fun. Like it's a really fun satire of the Japanese government, and and then when Godzilla is there, he's amazing. He shoots lasers out of his back at one point. It's wild. and all the fighting with Godzilla stuff is really cool. So that is Shin Godzilla. I wanted to bring that up because I really wanted to see that a couple years ago, and it kind of just slipped through the cracks. Finally got a chance to watch it. So
where did you find it?
I got it through my Netflix disc plan because I still have that.
The wow. Only person in America that still has that.
You're the guy.
I am the one guy keeping that place in business. anyway, so that wraps up our discussions, and we can move on. Let's do it. Here's the featured review of Avengers Infinity War.
We got one advantage. He's coming to us. We have what Thanos wants, so that's what we use.
Let's talk about this plan of yours. I think it's good, except it sucks. So let me do the plan, and that way it might be really good.
Wow.
All right, that was from the trailer for Avengers Infinity War, the new movie written by Christopher Markus and Stephen McFeely and directed by Joe and Anthony Russo. And usually I read a cast list of the movie, but that's going to take 6 hours. So let's just say a shitload of people are in this movie.
That covers it.
That's the scientific term.
Exactly. And then the IMDb plot synopsis for the Avengers Infinity War reads, "The Avengers and their allies must be willing to sacrifice all in an attempt to defeat the powerful Thanos before his blitz of devastation and ruin puts an end to the universe." Now, Mike, obviously we're big fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We talk about it kind of a lot. Vin, give us a little bit of background for you. What's your take on the Marvel Universe up to this point?
Me and my dad went to see Iron Man in 2007 when it came out, and I've been kind of strapped in since then.
Yeah, fair enough.
I love blockbuster movies when Michael Bay isn't involved with them. So this is like a dream come true for me because they're so fun. I love a fun movie. My only complaint with Marvel is that, and they didn't do it in this one. Well, they kind of did it in this one. I hate villains that are kind of just like a bad version of the hero.
Okay, I see what you're saying. And that is something Marvel does a lot.
Iron Man 1, he fights Obadiah Strain.
Yeah, Iron Man 2, when he fights
a guy in a bigger Iron Man suit.
Yeah, yeah, that happens in Marvel movies.
And a guy in a smaller, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that happens in Iron Man. It happens in Iron Man 2.
Doctor Strange.
Yeah, even up to
Captain
Black
America,
Panther.
Arguably.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Black Panther, I liked it, though, because, Michael B. Jordan played a hell of a character.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah, so you're a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in general, it seems like.
I knew who Thanos was prior to, when the credits rolled on Avengers in 2012 and Thanos flashed on the screen, I was privy to who he was, because I'm kind of a comic book nerd.
Okay, I remember seeing that, I've been in, we've been into this since the beginning, since Iron Man came out, and yeah, we both flirted with comic book nerddom. In the past, I was really into comic books for a couple of years. Mike has been into comic books as well, but I don't think we're like mega nerds about the comics. We really like them. We are big Marvel fans.
I can't take that high of a compliment. I'm more of a part timer with comics.
Okay,
but I hit all the big ones, so I read Infinity Gauntlet.
Okay, fair enough.
For sure.
Yeah, but yeah. So when I remember seeing that the post credit scene for the Avengers when Thanos first showed up, and turning to my friend. And pretending I know who that was.
Oh my god!
Because he looked to me for answers, and I did not have them. But I had to pretend. I was like, "Oh, well, you know who that is, don't you?"
You were like, "Oh, that's Big Purple." You don't know Big Purple?
You know about that Big Perp?
Big Daddy P?
Exactly. Well, it seems like everything up to this point has been leaning to Avengers: Infinity War. I have seen it twice now. And
wow,
both times,
as have you,
both times I left the theater in a very fragile emotional state. So I guess we'll get to general thoughts. Vin, we'll start with you. What were your general thoughts on Avengers Infinity War?
One thing real quick before that, just to touch on this, how ballsy it was to put Thanos at the end of Avengers.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that was a...
It's like you said, like, nobody knew who that was. Right. Like, that wasn't... He's like, he wasn't, like, a known guy. So for them to, like, call their shot like that...
Yeah, I remember that was Joss Whedon's idea. That was, like, a throwaway thing that he threw in there. Because, you know, they were wrapping up on Avengers. And, you know, they had gotten to a point... That was, like, movie number six, the Avengers, right? Something like that.
Iron Man had two at that point.
Yeah, then there was Hulk, Thor, and Captain America, so... Yeah, their Avengers was number six. And at that point, like the Marvel movies had been pretty big. Iron Man was really big, but the other movies had been like, you know, solid hits. They weren't huge. And then the Avengers came out and blew everything out of the water. And so they kind of threw in that Thanos post credit scene in the same way they threw in that Nick Fury post credit scene at the end of Iron Man 1, where it's like, yeah, this would be cool if we get to do this, but we don't know if this will actually happen, kind of thing.
That's wild. I'm so happy it did. Like, I have been having dreams about this movie, like, what the plot could be for, like, months now. And then they always delve into some weird dream stuff where, like, I'm in a hotel but can't get room service. But, like, also Thanos is coming, but my main concern is, like, the room service thing.
Infinity War is just on the TV, but you're mad about your room service.
Yeah, I'm like, I want a burger. I want a midnight burger. Just don't give me attitude about it, hotel. You're a hotel.
Thanos is in his underwear, and he's about to fail his test, I believe, is also what happened.
And he's super embarrassed that the girl he likes isn't going to take him to prom.
Although that's the plot of
Infinity Gauntlet.
That's the plot of the book. Yeah, so it's pretty spot on, actually. I like this movie. I love this movie. I have a tendency to like most movies I see, which a lot of my friends sort of discredit my opinion about movies, which is fair, but I know the difference between a good and a bad movie. I just happen to love most movies I see.
Mm.
But, like, this movie was a great movie that is so special.
Mike, what were your overall thoughts on Avengers Infinity War?
So prior to going to see Infinity War, my friend that I work with showed me a YouTube review of someone who had seen it. And basically, I'm just going to say the same thing, which is, I'm shook. And while watching this movie, I felt like this movie was punching me and then tickling me and then punching me and then tickling me and punching me and then tickling me for 2.5 hours.
Yep.
Sounds like really, an abusive relationship.
Yeah. Like, you know, I should get out of this, but like I'm kind of comfortable with it. But
there's what you know. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's terrible advice. Don't do any of that, people. But I had a ton of fun, while watching this movie. Because it's awesome. It is a sight to behold, this 19-movie, 10-year-long build-up and experiment that Marvel is doing. Well, I guess it's beyond experiment at this point. But they were able to pull it off, which is insane. And to be part of that, like you guys from Iron Man 1. But there's just, like, a lot going on that's not fun in, like, an emotional kind of deep in my soul kind of way.
Yeah, this is...
Not fun, this movie's bad kind of way.
Has its heavy moments.
This movie gets a lot more intense than I think most Marvel movies tend to. And, you know, when I was watching it, I was kind of struck by how much the Marvel Universe has evolved over 10 years and how it can be anything from movie to movie at this point. You know, just 2 movies ago, we had Thor Ragnarok, which was this incredibly goofy, light riff on Flash Gordon. Like, that's all that movie was. And this movie pretty much picks up right where that movie left off, but does it in a much darker way. But... You know, likewise, you know, it's all still recognizably the same characters and universe, but this feels so much different from the first 2 Avengers movies specifically, and I think for a few reasons. I think mainly Joss Whedon's writing on the first 2 is in general like a lot lighter and a lot fun. That's kind of Whedon's wheelhouse, and his stuff can get dark real quick when it wants to, but he puts a lot of focus on people working together as a team and snappy banter, and there's always like a semblance of hope in whatever he does. And the Russos tend to bring some real-world weight to their Marvel movies. You know, this feels like more of an extension of the tone that, like, Winter Soldier and Civil War had than it does the first 2 Avengers movies. I was even, like, I rewatched a lot of the movies before I saw Infinity War. Not all of them, but, like, just, you know, a fair amount. And the first 2 Avengers movies were among them. And even after watching Infinity War, I was just watching TV the other day, and the original Avengers was on FX. And I caught some of it, and I was like, the difference is night and day. It's kind of insane. Looking back on that movie and then seeing where this movie goes.
Well, the characters have even grown so much since the first Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
Which is wild because that, at the time it came out, was like the look at like where these characters ended up.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a really interesting article on Slash Film that I was reading earlier. I didn't write down the author's name, but it was about the shift from terrorism right? Like in Iron Man, the whole movie is like kind of he's in Afghanistan, and it's sort of about predicated on terrorism, right? He's an arms dealer.
Yeah,
it's a regular Charlie Wilson's War.
Right, exactly. a shift from that to just to the emotional terrorism, as they called it in this article in Infinity War, right? Just about the trauma that all of these characters have undergone for the past 19 movies. And yeah. It's a really interesting shift in focus from those kind of big movies. And especially in 2018, I think that's an interesting thing also.
Iron Man really has had like one of the most interesting, probably one of the most complete character arcs we've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Like on film.
Yeah, I want to talk about a lot about his arc and spoilers, definitely, because I feel like there's a lot to mine there. I think both him and Steve Rogers, Captain America, have had really complex arcs throughout. But I think Iron Man specifically, like it's kind of remarkable how that character has grown from 2008 to now.
Yeah,
and seeing where that's gone, especially with what happens in Infinity War, like I was just thinking about it, not looking at anything, just thinking about it and being like, how did we get from there to here kind of thing? It's nuts.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think this movie's interesting in terms of its structure, because it is a movie that is basically nonstop action from moment one and with very little room to let its characters breathe. And if you've missed like even a couple of the Marvel movies over the years, I don't think you'd find this confusing, but I don't think the movie gives you a lot in terms of like who the characters are or why they're doing what they're doing.
It doesn't, and I love that.
Yeah, I mean, yes, and I think you'd understand what's going on, but if you skipped, like, a couple of movies, then I'm not sure you would care about some of the characters in this movie. Like, if Marvel had pulled a DC and released this as movie number three,
right?
You know, I think we'd be receiving it very differently. That said, you know, I am someone who has seen all these movies, I have attachments to these characters, and god fucking damn did I enjoy it. Avengers Infinity War. This really feels like the culmination. I mean, every character, every action set piece, every emotional beat just really works. But I think it's less a movie than it is more like episode 9 in a season of Game of Thrones, right?
I literally felt the same way. It felt like – it's weird in that it doesn't feel like a movie. But right. It does. But it doesn't.
It's very cinematic. It feels like a movie. It just also feels like the episode right before the series finale of a show or something, you know?
That's actually the best way to put it.
Like,
I definitely have some thoughts, TM, I guess, on the renaming of it not being Infinity War Part 1 and Infinity War Part 2 anymore, and it being Infinity War and Avengers 4. Fuck off. This is part 1 of a movie. Like, what are you doing?
Keep being like, no, they're two different movies. And it's like, yeah, but are they?
Well, I would say they are-ish. They were shot back-to-back, and they're obviously meant – this is obviously one half of a larger story. But I think what this movie gives you does give you a complete arc for its main character, and that is Thanos. Of course. Thanos is the main character of this movie.
Which, again, brazen choice.
Yeah, definitely. Bold, I mean, this
bold
like,
move.
They had to know this would be their biggest movie going into it. Like, it almost definitely had to be. And, you know, it did just shatter the opening weekend box office record, beating Star Wars The Force Awakens, which is insane to me.
I think it's up by two. I think Star Wars was 248 million, and this is going to be hit 250 minimum.
Yeah, so it's only like,
when you
beat
say it
by
like
a little
that,
bit.
Doesn't sound that crazy, but when you think about that, you're like, that's $2 million.
Yeah, and also it beat, you know, Star Wars The Force Awakens, which was maybe the most heavily anticipated movie of this century.
Not anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, now it was Infinity War, I guess. But it also, I mean, that's in the U.S. box office. It also shattered the worldwide box office, which was held by The Fate of the Furious. And it beat that by a good, like, $80 million, which is kind of insane. It got, like, $630 million total worldwide. And that's not even included. It didn't even open in China. Like, the movie has not opened in China yet, which means
it's going to make a lot of money there.
Yeah. Chinese box office was not even factored into that world record-breaking tally, which is kind of nuts. So, yeah, they had to know this movie was going to be huge, that, you know, it was probably going to break a lot of records and stuff like that, that everybody was going to see this. And the fact that they made Thanos the main character of it, it's a ballsy choice. And, you know, where this movie ends, I think, is also a ballsy choice. Even if you know there's more coming and that, like, again, not getting spoilers, but, like, certain things will probably be reversed at a certain point.
Oh, they have to, because we know what their upcoming release schedule looks like.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it works for this movie, and it works as an emotional beat to end the movie on. And honestly, my biggest concern going into the movie was Thanos, you know, because he's been teased here and there. Right, but he's been pretty underutilized, I would say. You know, he's in the post credits of the Avengers. He has a very small supporting role in Guardians of the Galaxy, and he's in the post credits for Avengers 2. And
only three of those were as Josh Brolin.
Yeah, the first time he wasn't even Josh Brolin, right? He was just some guy.
And he was much more purple.
He was much more purple back then. Yeah, you're right. But anyway, I would say the only movie that actually makes him seem like an actual threat is Guardians of the Galaxy 2, in which he doesn't even appear. But a lot of that movie is dealing with the trauma that Gamora and Nebula have felt about Thanos.
Right.
So if Thanos was underwhelming, like, that's 6 years of buildup just down the drain. But luckily, I think Josh Brolin as Thanos just flat out brings it. Like, he is phenomenal in this movie, and I think he gives, like, the best motion capture performance this side of Andy Serkis and War for the Planet of the Apes. You know, he's up there in that same league, I think. The fact that the movie centers around him as he sort of goes on his own hero's journey, I think, is just a really incredible feat that they were able to pull that off.
Oh, I care about Thanos, and that's, like, I don't mean, like, I care about him as a threat. I mean, I care. I'm like, wow, maybe his plan's not that bad, you guys.
Well, okay,
and then Doctor Strange is like, it's genocide, and I was like, right.
Yeah. Although I do have to give, I think we do have to give Marvel some credit that it may finally be, lifting or breaking the burden of its villain problem. Between Killmonger and Thanos, we have some really deep villains that kind of have a point, sort of like what you were saying, Vin. Like, maybe they're sort of right in some fucked up kind of way. Whereas their old villains are just, we're going to take over because we're evil.
And I'm an evil guy who does pirate noises, I guess.
Yeah, I do think they've had some, they've been making strides in the villain department. That has been a weakness of their stuff for a while. I think every time we talk about this, we always have to bring up Malekith from Thor 2 as, like, the worst, the worst of the worst.
I'm just disappointed because, like, that was Christopher Eccleston and I didn't even know.
Yeah. Nobody did.
Yeah, but I think over the last few years, I mean, they had Cate Blanchett and Thor Ragnarok, who was,
who's awesome.
Yeah, who was just gave a great performance, and she was awesome in it. But, like, again, it was kind of the same. Like, I'm just evil, and I'm going to take over. But, like, Kurt Russell in Guardians 2, I thought was great in that movie.
Keaton.
That was a very layered Keaton. Yeah, Michael Keaton in Spider-Man Homecoming, for sure. So I think they've had they've been slowly getting better in the villain department. But I think this year with Killmonger and Thanos, it really does seem like they've upped their game in a big way there. I do think the movie, like, might be too big for its own good at a certain point. And its narrative structure means that there are times when I wish we were watching, like, a different part of the movie, because it splits off into, like, four different sections. I think they all work. Like, I enjoyed watching all of them, but I enjoyed watching one of them, I'll say, less than the other couple of sections.
What can we rank them?
We could do it in spoilers.
I think do it in spoilers. I'll say that the section with the Peter Dinklage character is the one that I wanted to watch the least.
Wasn't it fun though that they, like, made him, like, the biggest guy? Like, I love that.
We'll talk about that in spoilers. We'll talk about it.
You're right. Sorry, everybody.
It is weird talking about Avengers: Infinity War without getting into spoilers, and we will real soon.
Well, the spoilers start. The credits roll. You see I don't even think you see the title and spoilers.
Yeah, true.
That's the thing. It's a very difficult movie to talk about without talk story specifics. But I will say the movie, because this movie is so big and there are so many Marvel characters in it, it also means there are a lot of characters in the movie who don't get that much to do. Most notably, I think Captain America and Black Widow. Who I would have liked to see a little more from. But I think the idea is that we'll probably see more from them at a later time. But I think the MVP. More on that in spoilers. Who were your MVPs of this movie? Like, who did you think was the best character you wanted to keep watching?
Guardians.
The Guardians are pretty great.
Every time. Drax, Dave Bautista comes in and gives the best performance in this movie.
I know.
Changes what the definition of comedy is.
I'm glad you said that, because Drax is also my MVP. he's amazing. He's so funny in this movie. My favorite character throughout this entire, like, cinematic universe has shifted over the years for a little. When Thor first came on the scene, it was Thor. Like, I loved Chris Hemsworth in that first Thor movie. Mm-hmm. And then around the time Winter Soldier came out, it switched to Captain America. And now I think it's Drax. I genuinely think.
Drax?
He's like. Yeah. This is not just like, oh, right from the beginning when he's got the thing where he's like, no, this is no dude. You're a dude. This is a man. A strong man.
Yes.
Yeah. I think my favorite probably is Doctor Strange and his little crew, just because I think that's the most interesting and fun in my mind, like the weird mystic cosmic stuff.
Yeah.
Wong is pretty
great. I was on board with that.
Doctor Strange is great in this movie. I think, I rewatched his solo movie before I saw this one too, which I'm glad I did, because end up playing a bigger role. Much bigger role in this movie than I thought it would.
Yeah, he's a major player. I like that, though, because
yeah.
Cumbie's got it.
There's
got
to be a better way to phrase that.
Nope.
But Doctor Strange is great in this movie, and I do think Thor also is a huge MVP for the movie. Like he probably has the most like crowd pleasing moments of this entire movie. And Hemsworth is so. I think Hemsworth might have the best. We say Drax is the MVP, and Drax is like Batista's great in it. I think Thor Hemsworth himself might have the best emotional beat in the movie, and we'll talk about that in spoilers again. Also Gamora I think is great in this movie.
I
too.
Love.
Yeah.
Oh God, Zoe Saldana is so good in this movie.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying though. The Guardians, and it's no secret. You know, you see it in the trailer. The Thor Guardians scene in the beginning is so
amazing.
When Chris Pratt starts doing the deep voice, and he's like,
"Are you mocking me?" He's like, "Are you mocking me?"
And they're all like, "What are you doing?" Like nobody supports him on his own team.
Yeah, I think my favorite joke in the movie is actually in that scene too, and I'll talk about that in spoilers too. But what did you guys think of Thanos' henchmen in the movie?
The Black Order.
The Black Order, the Children of Thanos, like whatever they're called, Children of the Corn.
I wish they had a lot more to do or were presented in any kind of real threatening manner,
which is
unfortunate, because they're awesome. I don't know a whole lot about them. Carrie Coon's one of them, though. That was dope.
Oh, you mean Proxima Midnight, whose name is never said once in the movie?
We only get Ebony Maw. We only get one name.
Who is awesome, by the way. I love...
Who's great. He was great.
Ebony Maw is the only one who really makes like a lasting impact, I feel like.
Which is unfortunate, because all the other characters looked awesome. They looked really cool. I wanted to see what they were doing. I want to know about them, what their role is. But, like,
I also
there's
love
60
that
other
Thanos,
characters.
Oh, I can't say this yet. I can't say the context, but at one point Thanos refers to Ebony Maw, and he just calls him the Maw. And it's just, like, such a cool, like, it shouldn't be, but it's like, oh, man, that's cool.
Yeah, it does seem, when you have a character named Proxima Midnight, how are you not saying that name over and over again?
Yeah.
How is that not the end of every line?
I'm going to look up what the Proxima Midnights of this movie were. That's what I mean. I'm saying details. That's my new word for details.
Yeah.
What did you think, Mike?
The Children of Thanos, I think they were fine. They were serviceable antagonists. Ebony Maw was a pretty solid one. And the fact that Carrie Coon was Proxima Midnight, like, that was pretty cool. But yeah, they do just kind of feel like CGI fodder for people to punch. And that's kind of, they feel like they, like, extra Chitauri laying around from the first Avengers movie kind of thing.
Yeah. Like that one dude sort of looks like a dark elf, kind of, but like, what is his deal?
Oh, I think he was a leftover from the Warcraft movie.
Yeah, like, definitely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so it's Cull Obsidian, I think, was the big guy.
Oh my God.
I think you're right.
Ebony Maw, Proxima Midnight, and Corvus Glaive, I think, who was... Oh, no. Corvus Glaive was the big guy. Cull Obsidian was, like, the elf-looking guy.
Those are such great names.
Yes.
Yeah, how are you not saying them all the time?
And they were not... Somehow they fell to the floor. All four of them, by the way, on IMDb listed between Shuri and the bus driver, played by Stan Lee.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, because those actors probably put in like 2 hours of work on the movie total.
Yeah, fair.
Although I think Ebony Maw is actually
were a little bit more threatening than maybe you guys do. They're definitely imposing when they first show up.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, that...
except Ebony Maw is scary. He's doing that shushing thing,
right? Yeah. And
he's got that speech that he clearly has committed to memory.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me.
Do you think he wrote that, or you think Thanos gave him that?
he has like a little business card with a speech written down. He's like referring
he's
got back
to on his hand.
He kind of reminded me of the gentleman from the Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode Hush.
Yeah,
haven't seen it. Heard it's great.
It is really great. But yeah, he kind of reminded me of those guys. But actually, yeah, speaking of that opening scene, I think that what I love about that scene is it does a great job of immediately establishing Thanos as a credible threat. Because we'll talk about why that is in spoilers, but I think that opening scene just like really sets the tone for the movie and really shows you what Thanos is capable of. And I don't think we can talk about any more of this movie without getting into spoilers. So. So we should probably get into spoilers, right? That should be a thing that we do.
Let's do it.
Is there another bumper, or we just go right into it?
There will be a bumper, and we're going to play that bumper right now.
Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! You're ruining everything!
Hey, guys, you know, this week I watched a piece of media that starred the great actress Carrie Coon and featured a significant portion of life on Earth just disappearing without a trace. But enough about the leftovers, guys.
Boom.
like Carrie Coon had to be cast in this movie because of Leftovers, right? Like,
that's got to be the only reason.
Maybe.
Did you watch Leftovers, Vin? Do you have any idea what we're talking about?
I eat a lot of leftovers, but
close enough.
Congratulations! You said the joke that everyone said when they first heard the name The Leftovers.
Thank you. I'd like to dedicate this to my parents, who I wouldn't be here without them, literally and figuratively. All right, Spider-Man's dead. Doctor Strange is dead.
Yeah, we are in spoiler territory now, man. Let that fly.
You've been holding it in for so long.
Tony Stark, disappointingly alive.
All right, so we'll back up a little bit. So the
we could jump in again. I just wanted to do that.
So the movie's narrative is split across several different groups, right? You've got the characters in Earth, and then you've got the characters in Titan. You've got Thanos himself, and you've got Thor's little side quest that's going on with Rocket and Groot. And it's good that Thor, Rocket, and Groot are great. Right, they are great together, and they are given great stuff to do. Because I found Thor's side quest to be kind of lackluster compared to the other stuff in the movie. I don't know how you guys felt. I don't know how you guys felt about that. I mean, it was still good, just not as good. So I'm just curious where you guys stood on that.
Yeah,
you maybe could have done without it. I liked that. I liked the Thanos tie into it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's you know the purpose of it. Like Thor is trying to build a new weapon that will kill Thanos. So it makes sense why you're watching this. I still enjoyed watching it. Like Hemsworth is great and Rocket's great. And I enjoyed watching that stuff. Wasn't super crazy about the Peter Dinklage character, but he was fine.
Who I had no idea was in this, by the way.
No, I think, it was on a poster a few weeks before the movie came out that I saw his name on. I was like, what? I kind of did a double take. How?
Yeah, I bet he's going to play a massive guy.
Yeah. I assumed it was going to be a voice role.
I thought so too.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know, the way he played a massive guy, it just looked very weird to me. You could tell it was very much Force perspective, and maybe it's just because I know that Peter Dinklage is a very short guy. So in my mind, it's just it just looks a little off. It was weird because I enjoyed watching Peter Dinklage, and he was clearly having fun. He has a pretty good line towards the end, where he's making Thor's weapon, and he's like, "No, don't do that. It'll kill you." And Thor's like, "Only if I die." And Peter Dinklage has a beat, and he's like, "Yes. That's what kill you means."
Yeah, I felt that section, you said, I was into it just by the very nature of those characters. I'm that interaction is fun. But it very much felt like the we need to explain things storyline. Peter Dinklage is going to say a bunch of exposition, Thor's going to do something cool, and then more exposition, and then Thor's going to do something cool. Whereas the other stuff is just we're going to fight everyone for 2.5 hours.
I think it was was that the pivot scene? Do you know the term I mean? Is that... It's that's the scene that every movie has where it's mostly exposition because it has to be there.
I think so.
It might be there. I mean, I think there's a little bit of that in the beginning of the movie too, when Wong just kind of recaps what the Infinity Stones are.
Was it weird that when they had the hologram, I want to call it, of the Infinity Stones, that he saved the Time Stone from the Time Stone wasn't in the hologram and he showed it to us for the reveal? Was that weird? Or
I mean, Doctor Strange is not only a master of the mystic arts, he's a master of the dramatic reveal as well.
It's true.
It is. That's, oh my god, Ebony Maw has that great line right in the first fight with them and Strange where he's like, your power is quite formidable. You must be very popular with the children. I was like, yo, sweet dig.
Got him. Burn.
Yes. Got him.
But yeah, that scene with Dinklage is him explaining what the Infinity Gauntlet is and why it can do what it does, and we need to forge this weapon and all this stuff. Right. I don't know, it felt the most exposition heavy section.
Sure.
To me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I would love a supercut of every time they say stones in this movie.
It's probably an hour long.
Yeah.
It's the same movie. Yeah. It's the same thing.
But all right, so we should talk about the ending of the movie, because I feel like that's what everybody's going to be talking about for Avengers Infinity War. That ending, man. I mean, so Thanos wins. Thanos succeeds in his goal. He snaps his fingers, and half of life in the universe just fades away into dust.
He snaps his fingers after Thor plunges his new axe into his chest and, pushes it in more.
Yes.
That I caught the second time I saw it.
Yeah, the dopest line.
He has such a great line. You should aim for the head, and then snaps his fingers.
Gone for the head.
Yeah, great. But yeah, I mean, when that started happening, it cuts to white. You see this vision with Thanos and the small girl, who's this Gamora,
little one,
little Gamora, And then, you know, cuts back to Wakanda and all the music cuts out. There's no score. And you just kind of like, hear like whistling, like wind almost, I guess. And you could hear like a pin drop in my theater. Everyone, like as soon as he snapped the fingers, everybody like kind of did a gasp and like, and then you just start slowly seeing the characters that you've come to love over 10 years just like disappear.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
First starting them off with
everyone's favorite
Big, Big Metal Arm himself.
Yeah.
He's like, Steve, and then he, like the hobo from Polar Express, disappears into dust.
Right. Yes. Yes. And then it starts happening to everyone. I mean, I think the Bucky disappearing one, I think it was key to start on that one because you get Steve's reaction to it.
Yeah.
You know, and I, me and Mike have talked about this in the past. I don't give a shit about Bucky. Like, I genuinely...
Not one iota of a fuck.
I'm curious where you stand on Bucky.
I don't think I do either.
Yes, I feel like they haven't really done that much with Bucky as a character, and everything that... And for whatever reason I do care about Bucky, it's just because he's friends with Steve. Like, and
I cared so much more when he was, like, just the Winter Soldier, who didn't say anything. He had that, like, dope paintball mask.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I feel like even in Captain America the Winter Soldier, like, the Winter Soldier himself is... like a secondary character in that movie. Like, I feel like, you know, the main bad guy in that movie is Robert Redford, and Winter Soldier almost feels like ancillary to that. And so I feel like the movies haven't done that much with Bucky as a character on his own. But I do care about Bucky in as much as I care about Steve Rogers, because I love Steve Rogers, and he cares about Bucky, so I care about Bucky because Steve does.
See, I like Bucky in the context of him and Falcon.
Okay, yes. Fair. Yeah. And, I agree with that, because I think I'm a big fan of Falcon. I like Anthony Mackie's Falcon a lot. I think they've done a lot of with his friendship with Steve over the course of the last few movies. And I would much rather see him take over the Captain America mantle if he ends up, if it comes to pass. But, I mean, narratively, it might make more sense for Bucky, but I feel like Anthony Mackie just is a much more charismatic performer than Sebastian Stan is. That said, so yeah. Bucky starts disappearing. And what I love about Steve's reaction to that, because Steve, like, you don't see that much of Steve throughout this movie. But he reacts in a very stoic manner in this movie at like the most outlandish things that happen, right? He sees a lot of things and he's just like being very stoic about it. So I think it makes Bucky's disappearance hurt a lot more when Steve sees that and just kind of like breaks down, like falls to the ground, you know? And then from there you get everyone else, like half of the other characters disappearing. So you have, Groot disappearing and Rocket kind of being like, no, Groot, why?
No, nothing snappy there. Just genuine sadness from the raccoon.
You see Falcon.
Sorry, the rabbit. Yeah.
Falcon starts disappearing, and like,
Rhodey. Rhodey's like
Sam?
Hey, Sam, where you at?
Where have you been? And like that kind of thing. And Scarlet Witch is disappearing while she's mourning over Vision's like cold, like lifeless husk.
Black and white corpse.
Yeah.
The most shocking one, in my opinion, was the next one, which was when Black Panther.
Oh, yeah.
T'Challa leans down to, I think the character's name is Io.
Okoye.
Okoye. Leans down and, like, reaches his hand out to pick her up. And you're watching it, and you're like, oh, I guess she's going to disappear.
And
then he does?
Yeah.
That, my jaw hit the floor.
Yes. But then I think the one that really got me, so then you cut away from Wakanda and you cut to Titan. And then most of the characters in Titan disappear. All the Guardians.
Mantis first,
then Drax, then Quill. Doctor Strange also.
Quill... caught me. Quill, I was not expecting.
Yeah, but really, the one... And then it was Spider-Man.
You gotta.
Then it was Spider-Man.
Of course.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
I cried when Spider-Man died. Genuine tears.
I shed... Yeah, I mean this in not like a... I cry weird. I shed a single tear.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I don't know. That one really got to me. That one.
He's a young kid, and he's like, "Mr. Stark, I don't want to go." He's like pleading with Tony, who arguably got him into this.
I was like yelling at Tony,
actually,
like, "He's
no,
just
no,
a
he
boy.
Got himself into
he's
this.
Just a boy, Tony. He didn't know."
Pulling a Joyce Byers.
Yeah,
he's like, "You ever see that really old movie?" And then he disappears. He's like, "You ever see that really old movie, The Polar Express?" And he disappears into dust.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's definitely the most heart-wrenching. It is the final chapter in the arc of Iron Man, right? Like, his ultimate failure, I think, is getting this young kid roped into this thing,
yeah.
And he fucking crumbles to dust in his arms.
Yeah, and I think part of that, I mean, we were talking about, you know, how well-realized Tony Stark's arc has been throughout this entire series. And what I love about Infinity War is it brings elements from all these different movies coming into play. So, you know, you have him referring back to his PTSD from Iron Man 3 a little bit, where he's talking about, like, Thanos has been in my head since the Battle of New York kind of thing.
So good.
And with, you know, in the beginning of Age of Ultron, you know, Tony's vision that he has at the beginning of that movie is that he is the only survivor as all of his friends have fallen. Right? That happens. That happens in this movie.
I thought we were going to get that exact shot for a second. Like, at some point on Titan, I thought we were going to recreate that vision. And that was wild.
Exactly. It was nuts. And so, and then you have that his relationship with Spider-Man that was built up over Civil War and Homecoming. And he's kind of like being brought in as this mentor figure for Spider-Man. And for him to just watch Spider-Man like disappear, like helpless, like he is unable to help him, is, you know, horrifying. And like, it's really emotional and sad. But I think one of the other great things about Tony's arc in this movie also builds off of Civil War. And that is when they have Thanos, like they have him like held down or whatever. And that's when Star-Lord finds out that he killed Gamora. And it directly echoes the end of Civil War, where Tony finds out that Bucky killed his parents.
Yeah, I don't care. He killed my mom. And, the best line in that movie.
Yeah, and so at that point, you know, when Tony sees what's about to happen, like he sees that like Star-Lord realizes Gamora is dead, and Tony starts shouting at him like, no, Quill, no. And because he knows how this goes, because he's there. I think what I love about that pair, that group of characters, that Tony, Doctor Strange and Star-Lord are all very similar characters, and that they're all very like hot-headed, and they all like let their emotions take over. At least Tony and Quill do, and Doctor Strange did at the beginning of this movie, but kind of evolved past that.
They're all the most arrogant
people. Spider-Man, I would argue,
and
Drax.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think specifically though with those three characters, I think that's really
For sure.
But yeah. And so Tony, I think Tony sees a lot of himself in Quill in that moment specifically, and he realizes like, you know, he has lived through this, he regrets it immensely. And he knows how badly this can go. So, yeah. But the fact that they was able to build on all those things for Tony's arc for this just one movie here was amazing to me.
Yeah, the amount of...
Well, this was his 10th time playing the character.
Is it really the 10th time? Yeah, I guess it must be, right?
It's either 9th or 10th. The next one might be 10, but okay. I think it's 10, yeah.
But, you know, for as dark and intense, as depressing as this movie can be, it's also somehow like super fun. Like it's
yeah.
Oh, it's the scene where the Guardians show up. This is the hardest I laughed in this movie, is when the Guardians show up to the Doc Strange, Spider-Man, Iron Man party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On Titan, and Quill's got a gun to Spider-Man's head and Tony's got a gun to Drax's head. And Drax goes, "Do it, Quill. I can take this." And then Doctor Strange is like,
No, you can't.
And he's like, what masters do you serve? And Peter Quill just goes, I don't know, what am I supposed to say, Jesus?
Which is such an amazing way to tip off how Stark knows he's from Earth.
Yes.
Yeah. He's like, where are you from? Are you from Earth? He goes, no, I'm from Missouri. And he goes, that's on Earth, dipshit. Yes. Like, Iron Man says that.
Yes, yeah, that was fantastic. That whole sequence was amazing. That actually had one of my favorite exchanges in the movie, too, where, like, Quill... We're just going to quote dialogue verbatim from the movie from now on. Where Quill comes in and he's like, where's Gamora? And Stark's like, I got a better one for you. Who is Gamora? And Drax, under his foot, is like, I'll have one better. Why is Gamora? I fucking lost it. Drax has every fucking killer line in this movie. And I think I read, like, James Gunn was pretty heavily involved in this movie. He's credited as an exec producer, but apparently he wrote or rewrote a lot of the Guardians dialogue, so it still feels very of a piece with his stuff from the Guardians movies.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
And that said, I did want to highlight my favorite exchange throughout the entire movie, which is when Thor first shows up in the Guardians ship, and the Guardians are making fun of Peter Quill for putting on weight.
And oh my god!
And you know, it's a few lines. It's a really funny exchange. But then after like a bit, Peter Quill's like, "All right, you know what? I'm gonna buy a Bowflex. Gonna buy some dumbbells." And then off camera, you hear Rocket's voice go, "You can't eat dumbbells, Quill."
Oh my god! I caught that the second time I saw it too. That was so funny.
So good. So good.
There's one, like, talking about the emotional details of the culmination of all these movies, like you were talking about with Iron Man and Stark and all this. Just the general continuity in this movie, this one I didn't catch until I got home later and read, like, an Easter eggs article.
Yeah.
when Rocket gives the eye, gives Thor an eye.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which apparently is the eye Groot, Baby Groot stole when him and Yondu were looking for the fin. He shows up with an eye in that scene, and they're like, no, what? And, like, Rocket keeps it.
Rocket's obsession with Liv is so funny. Yeah. When he meets Bucky.
Oh, man. That was such a perfect capper to that joke, to that recurring character bit. Because, yeah. A, I mean, just the image of Bucky Barnes and Rocket just spinning around in a circle with machine guns.
Bucky picks him up.
It was amazing. But then, yeah, that exchange afterwards.
And he's like, how much for the gun? Not for sale. How much for the arm? And he walks away. He's like, I'm going to get that arm.
Yeah. But speaking of, I mean, there's a lot of moments in this movie. I mean, I'm curious what your crowds were like. I saw this on opening night, and I saw it on Saturday, and I had packed houses both times, and both, like, insane, just, like, fun, like, huge crowds. Mike, I know you saw it at, like, 9 a.m. on Saturday. The regular crowd shuffled in, right? There was an old man sitting next to you.
Pretty much. Old man sitting next to me.
Was he having sex with his drink?
Nope. No, he wasn't. But the young kid next to me on the other side was dressed like Captain America and like, oh boy, I feel so bad for that guy. Like a young little 10 or 12-year-old kid, you know, in like Captain America pajamas with a Captain America shield pillow, like all hyped and ready to go. And it's just like, you're going to watch all your favorite characters die.
Nah, man, Steve makes it.
Steve makes it.
That kid was probably happy.
Yeah, and that's kind of the before you get into your thing, Mike, sorry. One of the big things leading into this movie was like people were convinced either Captain America or Iron Man would be dead at the end of this movie. And in fact, it's everyone else who dies.
The original, like, five
the original,
plus.
Yeah, the original Avengers lineup is still intact. We assume Hawkeye is not in this movie.
Right.
He might have turned to dust.
I can't wait until the post-credit scene in Ant-Man and the Wasp where Clint fades into dust. It's going to be awesome.
That'd be hilarious. They brought him back for the post-credit scene just to show
credits.
Oh, wouldn't it be wild though if in the middle of Ant-Man and the Wasp, like the snap happens?
I assume it will at the end. That's my theory.
I'm guessing it either the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp or a post-credit scene. Like, yeah. I feel like what will happen. I mean, I have like theorizing stuff later on, but I think throwing this out there, I think Doctor Strange will appear as an astral projection. Like, he sent that out before he disappeared, and sends Ant-Man into the quantum realm or something to fix shit. Like,
definitely.
Interesting.
But about my theater.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I mean, it was packed. People were into it, cheering, yelling.
And this was a 9 a.m. show, right? Like,
9 a.m. show, yeah. Wow. Saturday morning, you know. And the my favorite reveal is on Vormir, right, when Thanos and Gamora go to get the Soul Stone.
We didn't even talk about this.
And we see the giant Grim Reaper guy, and he's giving a creepy speech.
Right.
And he steps out of the shadow to reveal it's Red Skull.
Yes!
And my theater went fucking nuts at 9 a.m.
Not Hugo Weaving, by the way.
No, unfortunately. I thought it was, actually, for...
He does a tiny German accent.
He does his German accent. It's a guy from The Walking Dead, Ross Marquand. He plays one of the... characters.
Oh my god, that's the guy that does all the impressions, right?
Does he do impressions?
Isn't he the guy that does all like the micro impressions?
Maybe.
Of like celebrities doing other movies.
If he is, and that makes sense, the way I thought it was Hugo Weaving.
But for a 9 a.m. showing, my theater had surprising energy, especially in that moment where people
that's
were
great.
Like, oh shit, like going nuts. which was so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
funnily enough, I also saw it at 9 a.m.
Really?
On Friday though.
Oh, wow.
Damn.
Kind of different.
Yeah.
It was me. Still impressive. There was like 30 people in that theater.
Okay. Oh, no. Mine was packed, which is wild.
There's one guy in the back row who's giggling to himself the whole time.
I want to live that life.
Did not stop unwrapping candy the whole like 3 hours of this movie.
Only one piece of candy. He couldn't get it open.
I at certain points was more invested in that man's candy than I was. It's like, somebody help him.
But yeah, I love that Soul Stone on that whole section on Vormir. I think is some of the most powerful stuff going on.
Oh, definitely,
in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about the Red Skull a little bit. Like, that's of the things that happened in this movie, I think the most unexpected thing for me was Red Skull showing up. I never thought I would ever see that character again. I remember that it was years ago. Like, people were like theorizing, like, well, the way Red Skull dies in First Avenger, like, there's wiggle room for him to show up again somehow or whatever, like, sent to the future or whatever. I think this is way more interesting and like way cooler, and like the way he explains it is like, it sent me to this planet, and now I'm like the Spectre.
It cursed him. Yeah,
I am cursed.
Guard a treasure I can never obtain, or something like that.
He becomes the guy he kills in the beginning of First Avenger, basically.
Because
he kills the guard of the guy who was guarding the Tesseract in First Avenger.
Oh, interesting.
Which is really cool.
I do love, you know, we've talked about it before, I think, maybe for Civil War, basically, but with William Hurt, right, showing up. It's the first time they ever acknowledged the Hulk movie again.
Right.
And this is kind of, I mean, outside of Captain America and Bucky, just like as characters, they never really talk about what happened in that movie in First Avenger. So I think it's cool to see, like, I love when, now that we're at this point where they can just, like, drop a thing in that happened 10 years ago. And it's like, and you're just expected to know what it is, and it's fucking awesome. I love it.
Did anybody else feel kind of lied to? Because didn't they come out and didn't they were like, Miss Mar or Captain Marvel's in this movie, and they were like, and there's a scene where all, like, 64 characters are on screen at once.
I don't think that happened. I think they were talking about what they were filming, and I think that was probably they were filming Avengers 4, because they were filming them back-to-back. So that was probably that's probably what they were talking about. So, yeah,
I feel better then about that.
Yeah, I am sure there is a scene in Avengers 4 where literally every single character is on screen at the same time, and it'll be wild. But I think
so what you're saying is they're coming back to life.
You know what? I got a strong feeling they're not going to let Black Panther and Spider-Man go that easily.
Is it because they both have two sequels lined up?
Yeah, and also Black Panther just made, like, $1.5 billion.
Months ago, and he's already dead.
But, yeah, I mean, that scene on Vormir, I mean, that does have, you know, Gamora's death scene.
Right.
Which was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was very heartbreaking.
For, like, more than one, not just because of her, but I love the line the Red Skull has when she's, because, like, obviously from the minute he's, like, he has to get rid of something he loves, the audience knows.
It's got
to
be Gamora, yeah.
It's Gamora. But I think the interesting thing in that scene is that she doesn't know.
Right.
She doesn't think he loves
her. And he turns around and he's crying, and Red Skull's like, the tears aren't for him, they're for you.
Yeah, something like that.
He says it more eloquently than that.
Yeah.
And you're just like, that's the gut punch in that scene. It's not the shock that it's going to be Gamora, it's her realization.
Yeah, and then she tries to kill herself before he can do it.
Yeah.
And then we get to see the best character in the movie, Bubbles, comes back for another scene.
Dramatic Bubbles.
Dramatic Bubbles, yeah. That was...
I love how whimsical Thanos is. he loves Bubbles.
He just likes Bubbles.
Hates butterflies.
True. But I think what I love about that scene, and really speaks to the movie as a whole, like, the movie's theme seems to be one of sacrifice. Like, that's a huge theme throughout the movie. And, you know, this death was impactful and tough to watch, and Saldana, like, sells the hell out of it, like, on their own. But I think it also draws a really important parallel between Thanos and, of all people, Captain America. You know, Captain America and Vision later on say, "We don't trade lives." That's, like, his mantra throughout this movie. And then that's exactly what Thanos does. And that's what separates Thanos from everyone else. Because there are other times in this movie where... You know, somebody, like, if somebody dies, they could save a lot of other people. Like, the Battle of Wakanda happens to save Vision's life. Doctor Strange gives Thanos the stone to save Tony.
And they fail, because Vision dies twice. Spoiler alert. Yes. He dies not once, but two times. Arguably both terrible.
Yeah, really hard to watch. I mean, so Vision dies. And the other pre-snap deaths, I guess we should say, Heimdall, Loki, Vision, and Gamora are pretty much the big deaths in the movie.
And Korg, maybe?
Well, we don't see Korg, so he's alive in my book.
I think I saw a pile of rocks in that opening scene. I don't know.
I don't think I did.
We're going to pull a Game of Thrones where if they don't die on screen, they're still alive.
Right on.
Exactly. Syrio's still out there somewhere.
Exactly.
Korg you don't see. Valkyrie you don't see either. Right. And it would seem like such a waste to kill off Valkyrie at this point, right? She was just in one movie. And, you know, Tessa Thompson was so good in that movie. And here's the thing. I think, I think most of the deaths in this movie, like all the ones that happened because of the snap, they will be reversed during the next movie. Like, it has to happen somehow.
Yeah.
True, but other deaths that happened prior to the snap was Xandar.
Right.
I love how they touch on that just to the Guardians. They're like, he has the Power Stone. And they're like, what? How? And he's like, oh, yeah, he wrecked Xandar.
Which makes me sad because that means John C. Reilly's probably dead.
And Glenn Close.
Which is a bummer. And Glenn Close.
And Peter... he died. Peter Serafinowicz died in Guardians.
But yeah, so I think, you know, most of those death scenes will be reversed. But I think everything pre-snap is going to have to stay.
It has to. Because then it'd be real cheap if it didn't.
It would be kind of cheap. And, you know, with these deaths, I think these are all characters I think Gamora is the one that hits the hardest because Gamora is a core member of the Guardians.
Oh, and they kissed.
And they did kiss, yes. Did.
All that romantic tension finally paid off.
Yeah. What I love about Gamora also in this movie, there's a really like subtle bit of character development in the beginning. When she's first introduced and she's singing along to the Rubberman,
yeah.
the Rubberman song.
Yeah.
She's like jamming out. And like the Gamora in the first two movies, like she, you know, it's like she's been the one who doesn't dance, right? That's like her thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the fact that she has changed that much in between movies, I guess, like it makes you feel like you've been on a journey with this character. And so it makes her death a lot harder. As for Vision, I mean, I thought that death was very impactful as well. I liked Vision a lot. I mean, I think his intro in Age of Ultron is one of the best things Marvel's ever done. And
one of my favorite moments in a theater ever when he picks up
Thor's
hammer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
That was amazing.
That's amazing. And I think his line at the end of Age of Ultron might be my favorite line in the entire universe. I mean, when he has that conversation with Ultron at the end, and it's just kind of them philosophizing about like the futility of human existence.
You're afraid
of you,
of death. You're the last one.
You were supposed to be the last. Stark asked for a savior and settled for a slave.
I suppose we are both disappointments.
I suppose we are.
Humans are odd. They think order and chaos are somehow opposites and try to control what won't be. But there is grace in their failings. I think you missed that.
They're doomed.
Yes. But a thing isn't beautiful because it lasts. It's a privilege to be among them.
You're unbearably naive.
Well, I was born yesterday.
Which ultimately is kind of feeds into Thanos' ideology, right? And, you know, Vision's line is, a thing isn't beautiful because it lasts. Thanos, his whole idea is to make life last as long as possible, right?
Right, yeah.
And by killing half the population, but, like, he wants to prolong the actual existence of life.
Well, a lot of people suspect that Ultron... Like, there's a fan theory that Ultron, the events of Ultron were, like, preparing the Avengers for... I mean, of course, in terms of, like, the film, they were preparing the Avengers for Thanos. But, like, that Ultron literally knew that Thanos was coming.
That's possible. Yeah, that makes... Because Ultron knew a lot of things.
Also, there's a great line at the end of Age of Ultron when they're like, an elevator could lift the hammer because it's a machine. And that's why Vision lifts the hammer.
Elevator goes up.
So good.
But yeah. So the other. So Vision does die, and it's a bummer because I think Vision. I think Paul Bettany has been great as Vision. And a lot of this movie hinges on his romance with Scarlet Witch, which was really only hinted at in Age of Ultron: Civil War. But I think it does work. And I think, you know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Hulk and Black Widow romance, which, you know, kind of began in between movies. And to me, it's like totally believable. In both cases, I know people don't like. There's a lot of like pushback on the Hulk Black Widow stuff in general. I like it.
Did anybody else think that Black Widow and Falcon were sleeping together because of that scene when Mark Ruffalo is just like, "Oh, also I'm back." I think that's what he says.
Falcon says this is awkward or something like that.
Yeah,
I did not get that vibe, but that's interesting.
That was my first thought, but I don't think it's accurate. Sorry, this is totally the thing that worked. I think the best for Scarlet Witch. Is that they didn't make her do that accent she couldn't do anymore.
She does it like twice, and I think it's by accident.
No, I don't think she does. I think she speaks like...
Just without it the whole time?
Yeah, I think it's... I the accent was pretty rough in Age of Ultron. Yeah, you're right. But I think, you know, she's appeared in Age of Ultron, Civil War, and this. And I feel like it's a gradual loss of accent. Like, I feel like it's sort of there in Civil War, but sort of not. And so it believably read as, like, somebody who just lost their accent over time living somewhere else.
Oh, no. Yeah. I see that also, but I'm just happy that she didn't have to do it. Because I think she's a fantastic actress, and it hindered her.
Yeah, yeah, fair. I mean, I think her accent was always better than Aaron Taylor Johnson's accent in Age of Ultron.
You didn't see that coming? That accent?
Yeah, it's definitely like, better than that.
Didn't see that coming, and then he's full of bullets.
Oh, my God.
Thank you for the quick recap of Age of Ultron.
That's the whole movie, actually.
They say that 82 times, and then he gets shot.
Roll credits. So I do think their relationship made Vision's death a lot more impactful. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Vision is a character that probably couldn't exist for that long in these movies because he's way overpowered. Like, he's a character who, like, almost breaks whatever scene he's in because, like, why wouldn't they just have Vision do this or whatever?
He got manhandled in this movie, though.
He did. He did. I mean, especially the second time when he dies, man. I mean, Thanos just rips that stone right from his head. And you see that grayed out husk, and it's like, oof, Jesus.
You haunted. See his legs dangle.
They go limp, and then he turns black and white, which is awesome. Holy shit.
It was crazy.
All his color.
Yes. I sort of think Gamora might come back.
You know?
I've heard that.
I thought about that. And I'm sure there could be some kind of shenanigans where she could come back. But also, I feel like her death is the most meaningful in this movie.
Oh, and definitely.
I kind of want her to back. Like, I have a lot of conflicted feelings about that. Because on the one hand, like, that was the one, like, the other deaths in this movie, I mean, Heimdall, I wasn't really thinking about. But Loki and Vision, I figured were goners for sure.
And the Collector.
Oh, yeah, I guess the Collector also kind of dies. You don't really see him die, though.
That scene was great, though. Sorry.
Yeah, I did like seeing him again. But with Gamora's death, I feel like that one really surprised me. Partially because I feel like James Gunn is so protective of the Guardians. Like, they're his baby. And I was surprised that they would kill off one of his characters in a movie that wasn't technically his.
Especially after, like, that romantic dam finally bursts with those two.
Exactly, yeah. But at the same time, like her scenes with Thanos are so good in this movie, and they are given so much weight, and her death means so much in this movie that I don't know how you could bring her back without it feeling kind of cheap.
Well, I think he might bring her back.
You think James Gunn himself would bring her back in, like, Guardians 3?
No, no, I mean Thanos.
Oh, you mean Thanos.
Well, the thing is, so let me nerd out real quick. What happens with the Soul Stone in the comics is that when it takes a soul, it stores part of it in what it calls, like, inside of it, which is called the soul realm.
Okay.
The other thing about the soul stone is that it's sentient. Like, it's a living kind of thing in and of itself. So a lot of people suspect that there's a theory going around that Gamora became the soul stone.
Okay.
Which is also why she's in it at the end when he does the snap and it goes to that, like, astral plane with Lil Gamora.
Yeah.
So I think that there is a way to bring her back. It's like the way that you bring her back and make it feel not cheap is if you kill Iron Man and Tony Stark in the next movie. Iron Man and Captain America.
I think I'm not sure if we'll see both those characters die. I think we're gonna see Captain America die. That bet, and I think Tony will retire, and that would kind of be it. You know what, I did want to mention some of the big crowd pleasing moments. I would say my theater erupted in applause several times throughout the movie, but specifically during two big scenes. Like, both times I saw it, these scenes got enormous applause. First time is when Captain America first shows up in Scotland.
Yeah.
And he, like, emerges from the shadows, and it's the coolest thing. And then the second time, which is one of the coolest shots in the entire movie, is during the Battle of Wakanda. You see Thor, like, making that hammer and his, like, little thing, and then the Bifrost comes down, the hammer fucking goes through, annihilates a shitload of enemies, and then it's that shot of Thor, Rocket, and Groot coming out of the Bifrost.
So
with
good.
The hammer going back to Thor. Holy shit. Like, my entire theater just erupted both times. Like, it was insane. Thor, Rocket, and Groot showing up in Wakanda, motherfuckers.
I am,
like,
Groot. I am Steve Rogers.
Yes.
Got a huge laugh every time.
Yeah.
I was really hoping that as we're following Stormbreaker, that's the action's name, as it's going through the enemies, I was really hoping the opening riffs to Immigrant Song were going to kick in. That would have been the dopest shit.
That would have been insane. I don't think it would have fit this movie.
Not at all. I just want that to be Thor's theme from now on.
Could you imagine what chaos it would have been is if they let everybody direct, like, every director from the previous movies direct the scenes that their guys were in? I assume that's what it would be like, what Justice League is now.
Yeah.
It would have been so cool.
Infinity War goes into reshoots, but instead of hiring Joss Whedon, they hire Zack Snyder.
Oh God!
No,
I was thinking they bring back Taika. They bring back John
Favreau.
They bring back the Russos can handle the Captain America stuff.
James Gunn for the Guardians stuff.
Yeah, James Gunn for the Guardians
stuff.
Whoever directed Doctor Strange, kind of get them in there.
Scott Derrickson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that guy. I believe you.
Bob Boberson. Yeah, that guy.
Can I for a second talk about something that bugged me a little bit because it was my favorite moment in the movie, and I think it could have been better.
Sure. What was it?
The scene where, and again, I know they don't mention this a lot, but where Thanos is like, he's like fighting Tony one-on-one. They're PvPing. And he's like, Stark. And Tony's like, you know me? And he's like, I too am get what? He's like, I'm cursed with knowledge or whatever. But they're fighting.
Something like that.
And Tony, his like, you see him losing nanites as like the suit is shifting to different parts of his body in what's an incredible fight sequence. And then Thanos like rips his, Tony has a blade that Thanos like breaks off and like sticks him with.
Yes.
And Thanos has the line that's, it was in the second trailer, and it's the line that sold me on this movie when he's like, when I'm done, half the universe will remain. I hope they remember you.
Right.
And then he doesn't kill Tony.
Well, that's the thing. He's about to, obviously.
No, I know.
But then Doctor Strange stops him. And I think...
I know had to happen.
That's the thing. I feel like, you know, there's that scene earlier than that where Doctor Strange is using the Time Stone to go forward in time and see all the different ways this conflict's going to go. And he says he's seen like 14 million different alternate realities, and they've only won in one of them.
I was glad it wasn't zero.
Yeah. Yeah. So he knows there is one way for this to go where they do actually win. When they're on their way to Titan, Doctor Strange even says to Tony, like, his only priority is protecting the stone at the cost of anything else.
Yeah.
And the fact that he hands the stone over to Thanos to save Tony's life is a huge shift for Doctor Strange. And I think it absolutely has to do with the fact that he's seen which way this conflict goes.
Yeah.
And he knows that Tony has to be a part of it. Like, he's seen, like, Tony is a big factor in how it goes from there.
Yeah, I love that he's we're in the end game now.
Yeah, yes. Stark's or Strange's last line before he fades into dust was, "It was the only way."
Yeah, it had to be.
Blows away on the wind. So like,
you know,
we
like
know
the
that,
hobo from Polar Express.
Like the hobo from Polar Express. That was obviously, you know, the one version that Strange saw was they had to give him the stone for something weird, some weird shit to happen in order for them to win in the end.
What's so interesting about this movie, though, is that up until the last beats of the movie, it plays out as a movie in which the Avengers are going to win.
Kind
of,
yeah. It does. It's very interesting because it's subtly showing you Thanos' arc. Because Thanos is the only one. I mean, there are characters with arcs throughout the movie. But I feel like Thanos is the one you're actually following.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's in a very subtle way, and you don't realize that until like the movie's about to end. And you see that Thanos is the one who's has a mission, and he has a journey. And he likes bubbles.
On
this quest. And he likes bubbles. But he's on his quest to collect these stones and you know, wipe out half the galaxy. And he accomplishes his goal. He does that. And the movie ends with him doing that. And so you are basically just... like, he is the one who changes the... like, who goes from point A to point B.
Oh, he's the protagonist, for sure.
Yeah. And so to have the other the heroes actually lose in the end, like, it makes sense. Because Thanos is the main character, right? Like... like this is his hero's journey, like in a weird kind of way.
Oh, 100%. It's like really refreshing to see that.
It's so ballsy for what could easily be, I mean, and is for the most part, like this large tentpole, family friendly, just textbook Hollywood franchise.
Right.
Go that route of nope. We're gonna make you watch all your favorite characters die, and the bad guy wins,
including this high school kid.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Man, hard to watch. Otherwise, I mean, just cool shit. Let's just talk about some cool shit throughout the movie. I mean, I do want to give a special shout out to the Black Widow, Okoye, Scarlet Witch team up in Wakanda.
Yeah.
That was pretty dope.
Oh, when Scarlet Witch comes down, what does Okoye say? She's like, why was she up there the whole time?
Yes. That was fantastic. And the battle in New York early in the movie was also, I think, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like Tony, that's Iron Man, Doctor Strange, Wong, and Spider-Man, and Banner, sort of.
Hulk. Yeah. Well, not Hulk.
Bruce Banner. We're talking about Hulk a little bit because he's obviously having some difficulties here in this movie.
Performance issues.
Hulk rectile dysfunction. Is that
God
what we're
damn
gonna...
it.
Damn. Yep.
I do, you know, on top of everything that was sort of like that we've been talking about with this movie is, you know, finishing or touching on these other arcs, you know, sort of the fallout of Thor Ragnarok. Clearly, this is, you know, Banner dealing with that. But also, Hulk, for the first time, loses a fight in the beginning of this movie. Gets his ass handed.
Gets his teeth
his ass handed.
In.
He's afraid. That's why he's not coming out.
I know,
That's my favorite part.
That's 100% of what it is, yeah. And I love that. And that's what I was talking about before, how this movie immediately establishes Thanos as a credible threat, is that he beats the Hulk.
Yeah, he likes the Hulk.
Pretty
that's
easily.
All he has to do, and suddenly he is the toughest character these guys have ever fought.
Was it weird, though, that
also
Loki...
another thing...
Sorry, this bothered me a little bit. Both times I saw it, where, like, what was their plan? Because Loki obviously set up the line where he's like, we have a Hulk. were they like, all right, Hulk, wait until Loki says this?
Yeah. Well, this is the – I was going to mention that. I didn't realize this either. No, it's fine. I read in when that Easter egg article that's what Iron Man says to Loki in the Battle of New York in the original Avengers, and I didn't even put that together. It blew my mind.
Oh man, that was my that was, like that started that happened early on in the movie. I was like, oh yes, fine. Like this, I'll like
we're
this.
Doing it.
Yeah, it's like wow, Loki's really been holding on to that one. Yeah.
Well, I love that you know in Ragnarok too when he sees Hulk and he's like, I have to get off this planet. I love his relationship to the Hulk.
Yes,
which I guess is now over.
And there are a lot of like. I think really cool callbacks to the other movies. I mean, like we talked about him from a character development point of view, but just from you know people referring back to things like they reference Kevin Bacon, the guard.
Is Footloose still the best movie in the world?
And Spider-Man's like it never was. What are you talking about? or the way Spider-Man like refers the Spider-Man like refers to Aliens as a really old movie in the same way he talks about The Empire Strikes Back, and stuff like that. So there's a you know there's consistencies between what the characters you know say between each other and they remember stuff from previous movies. I like that.
Thor also has a great line about Kevin Bacon where he's like, we're the Avengers. Who? Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And Mantis is like Kevin Bacon? And Thor says something like...
he might be on the team. I haven't been there in a while. Like,
yeah, it's so good.
Yes. Other cool shit. I mean, also the fight on Titan with Thanos where Doctor Strange just makes like a million of himself.
Oh,
and
my
is, like,
God.
Using like the magic whips and whatever. That's really cool.
When Spider-Man is going through the portals and he's like, magic kick, magic punch.
That's what I love about Spider-Man in these movies, especially in Civil War, where they just fundamentally understand what a character is and what they do. That's the most Spider-Man shit of all time when he's flipping through portals and doing saying that.
Yeah, absolutely. We should talk about the post-credit scene a little bit. We should mention there's only one post-credit scene in this movie, which is different from Marvel at this point.
Yeah, no mid-credit scene.
Yeah, no.
You sit in what you just watched.
Yes, you sue in this for a little while.
Actually, where the post-credits scene normally would be, you watch the Avengers title fade, like, do what all the characters just did.
Yeah, they fades away. And
like the hobo from Polar Express.
Exactly!
See, you get it. But yeah, the way these movies tend to go, usually like the custom credits, and it'll be like this big, like animatic, like flashy credit sequence, right? It'll show like all the cast members' names and all that stuff, and then it'll do the mid credits, and then it'll do the normal credit run until the end credits. But it just cuts to credits, and it's just the normal credit run for.
Yeah, it's real.
It was a weird credit run though. Like Chris Pratt was the last solo card, but he got like the and credit.
Yes, yeah. There's got. I would imagine the backdoor contract negotiations that had to go into making this movie are really fascinating for like really hardcore Hollywood nerds. So like I'd be into it, but because he gets like the and credit, but then like
a couple
of
them. I think Benicio del Toro also gets it.
No, he gets it. It's with Benicio del Toro as the collector, with Josh Brolin as Thanos. And
Chris Pratt. Yeah, not as Peter Quill Star-Lord, just and Chris Pratt.
It just caught me off guard. It was weird.
Yeah, but that happens a lot. I remember in Spider-Man Homecoming, Gwyneth Paltrow was like fourth build, and she and she is like in 30 seconds of that movie.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning into our secondary podcast, Credits Cast.
Yes. Credits Cast.
And subsequently our third podcast, Paltrow Cast.
But anyway, the post-credit scene of this movie, Nick Fury and Maria Hill appear. First time we've seen them since Age of Ultron.
They show Nick Fury driving a lot.
Yeah.
Not in this movie specifically. He's only in the one scene. But like, I feel like in a lot of movies, you see him like in an SUV.
Yeah, that's
a good point. It's definitely in The Avengers and Winter Soldier. So yeah, you're right. So the post-credit scene has Nick Fury and Maria Hill. They're driving. And then a car... you know, crash in front of them, they get out, and then the snap stuff starts happening, Maria Hill starts fading away, Nick Fury starts fading away, and he says, motherfucker, as he's fading away.
Which is great.
Which I only assume was in Sam Jackson's contract.
Yeah, I have to drop one of these at least. I mean, it cuts off before he can finish the word fucker, but yeah.
But we know.
We know.
We know.
But as he's fading away, he has this pager, and he's hits this button or whatever, and the Captain Marvel logo appears, and so Captain Marvel,
woo! Oh, my that post credit scene is my favorite Leftovers fan film.
Yeah, it really did play like the opening scene.
It's the same thing. Yeah. The car crash and everything.
I kind of wish there was no post credit scene.
I can see that.
Could you imagine if they had done that?
That would have. Been again. These are all very anything negative I have to say about this movie is so nitpicky.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like that
would have stuck the landing.
Yeah,
that would have been amazing. But I think that's too final for what this movie is doing.
Right. I think they need to make sure people know that there's another movie after this.
Yeah.
Because imagine this is the last one.
Thanos will return.
Yes. I was just going to say that. Thanos. Cementing the Thanos as the protagonist.
Yes, that was pretty fantastic. So do you guys have a guess for what the title for Avengers 4 is going to be? Because my guess is Avengers Endgame.
I hope it's Avengers Secret Invasion. I don't think that's going to be it.
They're going to start another event in the end of this movie.
Yeah. Everybody was Skrulls the whole time.
They're Skrulls. They were the Skrull versions that disappeared.
Right. Well, the Skrulls are like factored pretty heavily into the new Captain Marvel movie, which hits a few months before Avengers 4 does. So it's possible the Skrulls are involved in Avengers 4 in some capacity. But I think Endgame would be a good name for it. Because that's what Doctor Strange says to Tony. We're in the Endgame now. But even in Age of Ultron, there's a line that Tony says, pointing to the sky. The reason that he creates Ultron in the first place is he doesn't know who Thanos is yet, but it's to protect the Earth from Thanos, right? That's the entire idea behind Ultron.
Right.
And when he's describing that to, I think, Captain America, he's pointing to the sky. And he's like, that up there, that's the Endgame. And so I think Avengers Endgame would be a perfect title for Avengers 4.
But isn't it supposed to be, or you know, according to why it's just being called Avengers 4, it's a spoiler of some sort, right?
I think
they said that, but I read a thing today from like Kevin Feige where it was like we wanted people to focus on 3.
Yeah, that's I think that's partially what it is, and it's why like you didn't see any trailers for Solo until a few months after Last Jedi had come out, because we want people to focus on the movie that we actually want them to see right now. I think he was saying originally it was Infinity War Part 1 and Part 2, but the way the Russos have talked about it, like they kind of evolved into their own distinct thing, so they're telling the same story, but apparently Part 2 or Avengers 4, whatever it ends up being called, will be very different from what Infinity War was. And I'm picturing like a Back to the Future 2 style time travel movie.
I kind of think that's what it's going to be, though.
Where you think it's going to travel back to other Marvel movies? Because I think that would be kind of a lot of fun.
I think it's going to travel back to the first Avengers for sure.
I think it could. I think it definitely could. But do you have predictions of where Avengers 4 is going to go?
It's going to be called. I think it's going to be called Avengers Assemble.
I don't know if it would be called that, because the first one is called Avengers Assemble in other markets outside the U.S. Like in the U.K., it's called Avengers Assemble. That's what that movie's called.
Well, in that case...
I did see... sorry.
I got nothing.
I think in that same tweet thread, Jeff Cannata said that he would like it to be called The New Avengers, which would make sense. Pretty dope.
That would make sense, although I feel like this Avengers 4 is going to focus pretty heavily on the original core team of Avengers.
Since they're the only ones left.
Yeah, so it would be a little weird if they were called the New Avengers, and it was like, oh, but all the New Avengers have been raptured.
The New Adventures of Old Avengers.
Yes, I'm in.
Got that little Clark Gregg cameo in there, because New Avengers of Old Christine.
I am very excited. Nice, Mike. Deep cut. I am very excited to see the conclusion, and the setup for Phase 4 and what that means, like what the Avengers looks like at the end of this.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, talking about the Skrull and Secret Wars or Secret Invasion or whatever is the one.
Secret Wars would be cool, too, because Thanos could send everybody to Battle World.
That could happen. That could be a thing.
I just want to see what the fuck is happening, mostly.
Yeah.
I'm also really interested to see the explanation for where Captain Marvel has been. She's got to either be in, like, the quantum realm or some shit, or deep space, or frozen somewhere. Because where are you at, dog?
That he sent a message. He had a pager, which is weird.
Yeah.
So I was suspecting that he actually, when he paged her, that was, like, sent through time.
It's paged to the 90s?
Ooh, maybe.
Paging himself.
How that movie's going to end.
Could be. That could be something. Talk about our wildest predictions for Avengers 4, right?
It's Ant-Man shrinks down, goes into Thanos' pee hole, gets big, they win. that's the end game.
That's the end game they were talking about the whole time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God.
He's I'll show you the quantum realm.
I like it. That's a good one. We'll put that,
we'll workshop it.
Yeah, put that on the board.
But anyway, my wild predictions. So I think Captain America has sacrificed himself to save the others by using the Time Stone. Before he does, though, he travels back to 1945 and has the dance with Peggy.
You evil motherfucker.
And it'll be beautiful. I'll cry for like a week. and then Cap dies. but in doing so saves everyone else. Tony finally retires, settles down with Pepper, leaving the door open for him to still appear in these movies once in a while if they want him, like Spider-Man Homecoming. Thor and Hulk reunite with Valkyrie, Korg, and Meek, and Taika Waititi makes 20 more Thor movies. Black Widow becomes the leader of an all-female team of Avengers that includes Scarlet Witch, Okoye, Nebula, and Wasp.
Hot, I'm in.
And Hawkeye just chills in the farm and does Hawkeye things. That's my...
I would watch the hell out of a Hawkeye movie that was just like a slice of life.
Yeah. Yes.
Like a little dramedy.
Just call it Clint. Just call it Clint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a little dramedy, like his wife gets laid off or whatever, and he has to go back to work and stuff like that.
Oh, in the regular work world?
Yes. It'd be great.
Yeah.
If this was the 90s, that movie would get made.
Yeah.
He used to be a superhero. Until...
Rob Schneider is a superhero.
I'm very excited to see Hawkeye show up in Ant-Man and the Wasp. He's got to be there, right? Like,
it's possible. I remember there was a rumor that he was going to be in that movie.
They throw that out there, that Scott and Clint went off the radar together or something like that.
Well, they're on house arrest
on their families.
House arrest, right.
Yeah.
Which is weird for Ant-Man, I feel like.
For them to be on house arrest? Well, I feel like
the family comment, because doesn't Scott really not have a family?
He has family. I mean, the whole movie's about him. He has a daughter and his ex-wife and his ex-wife's husband. They're kind of a family.
Bobby Cannavale.
Yeah, Bobby Cannavale. And Judy Greer in the ex-wife role that she played like 10 times that summer.
Her whole career.
Her entire career.
Yeah, I am on board with your crazy predictions. I am very excited to see the weird spin-offs we probably get. Maybe.
You never know. I don't know. There could be some stuff. I think, I mean, as far as we know, there's Avengers 4 coming out. So we got Ant-Man in July, Captain Marvel in March, and then Avengers 4 in May. And then Spider-Man Homecoming 2 is that July.
Right.
And then from there, I think Guardians 3 is slated for 2020. And then after that, we don't really know anything about what's in the works. I'm sure Black Panther 2. I'm sure Doctor Strange 2.
Well, Amazing Spider-Man 2, they came out and said begins. Or Spider-Man Homecoming 2. Not Spider-Man Homecoming 2. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 2
Spider-Man
starts
Winter Formal.
Like 5 minutes. Oh, my God. Could you imagine?
I would love the shit out of that. That's how they titled all those movies.
That'd be so good. Spider-Man Graduation. They said it begins like 5 minutes after Avengers 4 ends.
Oh, really? Okay.
Wow. Yeah. I can't wait for Spider-Man College Dropout. He's just going to remake all the Kanye albums.
Spider-Man,
and then just get really weird on
Twitter. Oh, my God. Mike, what do you think is going to – what's your wild prediction?
For movies that are coming out at some point? I mean...
No. Sorry. Other Mike. What's your...
Oh.
I'm going to call you Mike 1 and you Mike A.
Got
that's
it.
Good.
Oh, so we're both the best. Just
yeah,
like the hobo like? From... Oh, no, wait.
In a way.
Yeah. No, I think we're going to see... I feel like Thor is sort of shaping up to be the new leader, right? He's becoming got the most important weapon. He's the only one that could kill him in some way.
I definitely want to see more of this Thor, you know?
Yeah.
I've always really liked the character, but I feel like they've really nailed it with Ragnarok in this movie, and like I want more movies with this character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want short hair Thor.
Yes.
Which also one of the greatest lines.
Yeah.
So you copy my beard.
Yeah. That's pretty great.
I think Thor might play a much bigger role, which is hard to think of because he's already the most important guy. But in terms of just leading the Avengers, I'm really hoping on Falcon Cap. Like we were talking about before, I don't give a single iota of a fuck about Bucky. So
right.
It'd be shitty if he becomes Captain America.
Yeah, I would rather Falcon become Captain America and Bucky be like a supporting character in Wakanda for the near future.
Yeah, he's just his white
Bucky
wolf
Bucky has
forever.
Like 9 more movies on his contract or something.
That's
like
the thing.
Ridiculous.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. So they'll probably go Bucky Cap, but I would rather see Falcon Cap. I think.
I hope we get Shuri as Ironheart. She's the major tech mind, right? And that's
true.
She's already got the hand blaster things. That would be great.
And what more do you need?
That's all. That's all Iron Man's got, basically. So yeah, and I just am excited to see what new, like, you know, Captain Marvel is going to be huge. I assume, right? She's seems like the secret weapon, right? Like the Plan B kind of thing.
Definitely seems like she's going to factor it pretty heavily in.
Yeah,
is that she can draw the Infinity Stones were like created from a black hole, more or less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she draws powers. She, in the comics, at certain points, has drawn power from, like, white holes, which I don't think exist in real life. Outside of theoretical physics.
Sure, but this is a movie where Red Skull is a Grim Reaper on a different planet. So it's, you know, we can...
we can let it go.
Fair.
We can let it go.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see that, like, what this new version looks like. I think we're going to see the deaths or trimming of a lot of characters coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we'll still see. I don't think Hemsworth is leaving anytime soon. I hope not.
No.
Anyway.
Well, no, his contracts are done, so well,
I know his contract's probably up, but I know Evans and Downey are definitely out, and Hemsworth signed the same contract they did probably, or the same contract Chris, Evans did anyway. Downey's his own thing, but yeah. I think Hemsworth is still like is just having a blast playing the character now. Like he seems like he's still like loving it. So it wouldn't surprise me if he kept doing more Thor movies. I think we're going to see more of Black Widow in some other capacity. Like they've, you know, been talking for years and years about giving her own solo movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if maybe the time has passed on that. Like, I don't know if there's other characters we want to focus on at this point, but I would be into it. I would definitely like to check that out. And you know, who knows, maybe Hawkeye won't die and he'll do Hawkeye things.
Yeah. What my favorite aspect of this, you know, we're finally doing the Infinity Wars things. Is the sandbox just became as big as the entire universe. Now all these characters have met and can interact. Yes. So, like, yeah, Thor can just show up in a Guardians movie and, like, it makes sense.
He
right?
Could.
Like,
oh,
and
that'd
like,
be amazing yeah, if he's like, in Guardians 3.
Man. Right? Like, he could be a Guardian or something. I don't know. Like, some weird shit can happen. And that's my favorite part about these movies. And we've always talked about it. Like, you know, Iron Man shows up in Spider-Man, right? Like, these kind of people just popping up in other people's movies or Doctor Strange in Thor Ragnarok. But now we've expanded that to all of them. And now everybody can show up in everybody's movies, and it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, definitely.
I would want Dave Bautista in every movie. Put it down on paper now. I said it.
Just standing still.
Completely unseen. So for all we know, he might be in every movie already.
Maybe he's the secret connection to every Marvel movie.
That is maybe okay. That might be the funniest scene in the movie where...
How long have you been standing there? An hour.
Just that slow crunch of the chip that he's eating. It's great.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've been talking for like 2 hours at this point. I think we need to wrap this up.
Oh, yeah. My iPad's gone 5%. It might die.
Okay. Right. Fair enough. Before we do wrap up, I did want to mention one last thing, which is a cameo that's in the movie that I didn't know about until today, actually. The voice at the beginning of the movie, that's the Asgardian who's calling for distress, who's calling like the distress signal out, that's Kenneth Branagh, the director of the original Thor.
What?
Yeah.
Also, so. Real quick, very last line, I think, almost or second to last after the music credits, where they're crediting all the other stuff that helped film the movie. One of the things is a character from Arrested Development created by whoever.
That?
I don't know.
No, that I do know about this because I caught it the second time I watched it. You can see Tobias Fünke in his Blue Man group outfit in the collector's glass case.
Oh my god! That's
no,
amazing.
You can, yeah, because I mean the Russos used to work on Arrested Development,
right?
So they
is
worked, yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's you see him in the background of a shot over Gamora's shoulder in the collector's place. So
I gotta go see it again just for that.
Anyway, so I think that wraps up our thoughts on Avengers Infinity War. Obviously, we were all big fans. I think.
Oh, no, I didn't like it. Did I project something other than that? Is that not clear?
My thoughts dissipated faster than the hobo in the Polar Express.
New recurring joke. Good job, Vin. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys. This is
absolutely
fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, Vin. Is there anywhere you want to plug? Anything online that you want to say where we can find you this week?
Oh, yeah. I am on the YouTube at Krebuland Productions. It is a sketch comedy web series-ish. More episodic. It's not really serialized yet. We're working on it.
Yeah.
But I do sketch comedy. And check me out on Krebuland Productions. Me and my buddies, Sam and Chris.
Cool. Krebuland Productions on YouTube. And what's your Twitter account, by the way? What's your handle?
My handle right now is DJ Pendejo. But it's at I think, Vincent J. Craig.
Okay, that's
Twitter.
That's the important one.
Yeah.
Vin Craig on the gram.
Yeah, okay.
And look in the future. I'm making a new show. Just dropping on the air now. It's called – it's going to be a wine education show. This is serious. I know.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow. I hopefully it'll be kind of funny. I bring the funny, not the wine education.
Gotcha.
you're there for
somebody
your
else
looks.
That does that.
You bring the Polar Express references and they bring the wine.
It's actually called the Wino Express. No, that's a terrible name.
It's actually a pretty good name. You should think about that.
You're right. Nobody else take that. I copyrighted it just now.
Copyright.
I mailed it to myself in a letter. No, right. Thanks for having me, though. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
All right. And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog. All of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thanks so much for listening to Film Bookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriscio and Vin Craig. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast, shoot me about the title of your email because we produce a bunch, so it's hard to keep track. We'd love to hear from you. Join us for the next episode of Film Bookcast, where I think we're talking Deadpool 2. I think that's the plan, right, Mike?
Yeah, probably.
All right, cool. And you can check out our next Complete Works, where we're talking Nicolas Cage's role in a very different kind of superhero movie, 2010's Kick-Ass.
So, what a double feature, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. So thanks so much for listening, guys. We are out.